Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
It is April 1st, 2011. There will not be any April Fool's jokes today. We have a serious transmission lined up for you today. Thank you so much for joining us. It is April 1st on this Friday, 2011. I was told by some TV/movie producers that Sean Stone, Oliver Stone's son, who's a successful actor, producer, director in his own right, was a fan of the broadcast, and then last week or 2 weeks ago, he contacted me, and we've got him coming on the show today to just talk for 30 minutes about a new movie he's got coming out that with true life experiences he's had. Then we're going to shift gears because he wants to get into the New World Order and the fact that years ago, his Princeton thesis was on the Rhodes Scholar Trust and the Anglo-American Empire. And then that led him to some of the research and work of Jeff Steinberg with the LaRouche Organization, who I've seen many times on television but never interviewed, so he's going to be joining us. Also, one of the fellows that worked with Mr. Stone on his new film, Greystone, Alexander Wraith, is going to be joining us as well. And Bob Chapman won't be on with us in the third hour. He'll be on with us for 30 minutes at the start of the next hour. So that's going to be a jam-packed broadcast today. Plus, I look forward the next time Stone's on with us to just talk to him about being in, of course, JFK, but also the making of that and what it's like to be Oliver Stone's son and all the interesting things he's witnessed. I'm a big fan of Oliver Stone and his screenwriting. He wrote Conan the Barbarian. That was his first big hit, which is the good Conan. The second one's totally cheesy. He wasn't involved in that. He wrote Scarface with Al Pacino. Just an amazing writer is what I'm really a big admirer, not even so much fan. And obviously JFK, the seminal piece on what really happened there, so well done with all of those great actors that are involved in that film. So Sean Stone joining us coming up today, Oliver Stone's son, but again, big producer and successful director in his own right. He's got his first big feature film coming out here very soon, but done a lot of other projects as well. That said, I've got a lot of incredible news we're going to cover in the first hour and into the first half of the second hour with Bob Chapman today. Big developments on the Liberty front, huge developments on the nuke front at Fukushima in Japan, and radiation showing up at levels that they're saying are about to go above the safe threshold. And that's even according to the EPA here in the United States. No kidding. The first stuff that got here was low-level radiation from just the leaks now 3 weeks ago today. It's since then that you've had the crisis worsening with 100,000 times safe levels starting 6 days ago on Sunday. So we're going to be breaking all of that down. Also, some police state news. Google's making an app that would identify people's faces. So you just hold up your phone to somebody on the street, and it biometrically scans them through the driver's license database and through the Facebook database and comes back with a biometric positive face scan. Of course, they are NSA. We have Oakland, California, where you've got to get a permit to basically be a gardener or to sell it to your neighbors. Just total Stalin-esque tyranny coming in. The Federal Reserve is announcing that it's likely to raise interest rates by the end of the year following orders from the European Union Central Bank, who already announced yesterday they're going to raise them coming up later this month. And we've got also another big group of reports out confirming the Border Patrol, and I confirmed this years ago, but now it's doubly confirmed, is ordered not to arrest illegals. So we might as well not even have a border. Let's just be honest about it. So that's coming up as well today. Stay with us, jam-packed transmission.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
It is April Fools, April 1st on this Friday edition, 2011. I want to be clear, there's not going to be any April Fools on this radio broadcast today. We don't engage in that type of tomfoolery when we have so many serious issues going on, like the ongoing complete meltdown of at least one of the reactors and partial meltdowns at least 2 to 4, because some say there's 3 reactors, 4 or 5 that are having partial meltdown, explosions, ongoing smoking. No one really knows because the Japanese have been whitewashing it. We're going to be breaking that down. Also, Libyan rebels seek ceasefire after U.S. vows to withdraw jets. That's because Gaddafi is defeating the rebels. And so they say if he leaves all the cities he's captured, they'll talk about being friendly. And then if he does that, they'll retake those cities and continue attacking, led by Al-Qaeda. So we're going to be breaking down those latest developments. Ron Paul, in the House and Senate, both the father and son tag team, are moving to try to get congressional hearings dealing with the fact that the president didn't even consult with Congress, much less get the declaration of war or the watered-down use of force authorization resolution. And at the same time, they're moving to try to get some of the spending cut for the war if Congress is not consulted. Meanwhile, the rest of Congress, other than the Pauls and Kucinich and a few others, are moving to basically now support the new war, though they were never asked. So that is all ongoing on that front. That's just some of what we're going to be covering today. But before we go any further, I want to play a little 3-minute clip from Carl Sagan's television program. And this particular little piece is called The Mote of Dust, that tiny little dot in the Milky Way galaxy that is our sun and our solar system. For all of these people that compete with each other and fight with each other and lie and cheat and steal in the name of being dominant, but then at the end of the day, still you just die. And by engaging in all of this corruption, you basically toxify the human species, the human existence. Now, I understand being competitive. Even if you are a upright, good, decent, loving person, when corrupt, competitive people come against you, it makes you want to rise up and crush them. And many times you have to, either politically or physically or economically, or you will be overrun. I mean, you go back to our ancestors thousands of years ago, your little tribe would find a nice little river by a forest with some fields, good hunting, and, you know, a year later, a tribe would migrate into your area and try to kill all the men and capture all the women and children to be part of their tribe. And you would have to fight to the death to be able to keep your family together and not see your little children drug off to be slaves. So I understand the human instinct for war. I understand the human instinct to fight. But it's the difference between the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, our system that guards the individual as well as the mass, that enshrines the flower of the Enlightenment, the flower of the Renaissance, the flower of Western Christian ideals that you don't even have to be a Christian to agree with, have developed the best societies ever seen. Doesn't mean the West isn't warlike, corrupt, and evil. You can judge it all day, but then look at other regions and other areas of the world. All more barbarous, all more murderous, all more corrupt, more poor, because they didn't have that Renaissance growing from the Greeks through the Romans, then through the Middle Ages collapsing, and then back with the Renaissance, and then the final great expression of that, 1776, Declaration of Independence. It is the greatest expression of human liberty and ideas and true philosophy of common sense and what works. The mutual aggression truce of the libertarians, the checks and balances, the small government system that empowers the individual. Because every time you create big monolithic systems, corrupt mobs, corrupt gangsters, corrupt cartels come in, buy off the government, and use that large government system that's been built up as a apparatus to knock out their competition and then to, by degrees, enslave the country they're in. Then they always turn that country out as an engine of domination and empire against their neighbors. And those inside the empire are then exploited to further the living space of the emperor or the plutocrats, the autocrats, the technocrats, whatever combination of corrupt thugs you have running things. And then they run into another empire who has already gobbled up a bunch of countries and their two borders, the Persians and Alexander. The Romans, you're running into other civilizations as well and having conflict. And it's always the same. When the Romans rolled into Gaul, when the Romans rolled into Germania, they'd go in, kill all the men, all the leaders, and kill the boys down to about age 8. And they wrote handbooks on it. Julius Caesar, of course, wrote Battle for Gaul. I've talked a lot about where they describe it. You kill everybody down to about age 8. And then you take them and re-educate them. You take the boys and train them as auxiliary soldiers. And they're back on the front in as little as 6-7 years. And that's what feminism is. Destroying the family, destroying women, destroying men, turning women against men, men against women. All the sitcoms, all the dramas. Men are shown as vapid, giggling, gibbering idiots. Men then imprint on that and behave like that, thinking that's manhood. Women then believe that's how men are supposed to behave and then go out and find a mate who behaves like that. Then they disdain them and hate them. And handbooks were written on that. How to keep the black men dumbed down and not able to really even speak, and then set the women up as their rulers. That's modern feminism, and that is a Roman handbook, then translated into French, then into English, and we've years ago read that handbook on air, how they do it. But side issue, that's only one facet of all of this. I wanted to play this Carl Sagan clip and go over it, because it really crystallizes that your children that are alive today, before you know it, they're going to be gone. You're going to be gone. Before I know it, my parents are going to be gone. And then I will follow on a little longer after them, and then I'll die. And then my children will follow on a little longer. That's the human experience. And I love humanity. I see a powerful concert put on Beethoven's Eighth or Carina Burana by Carl Orff, or I go and see acrobats or, I mean, just what the human body, the human mind, artist, literature, poetry. It is so incredibly powerful. And I'm in love with humanity. I'm in love with our potential. I believe in humanity. The globalists also know how powerful humanity is, so they seek to make us weak so we're more manageable. But then the elite try to stay separate from the public, but they become degraded by their own propaganda and by their own culture. And the Carnegie Endowment documents from more than 90 years ago are public. Charlotte Isherby's Deliberate Dumbing Down has copies of them in it. They're online on our site. The whole book's free online, where they said they were going to dumb everybody down and turn us into servile idiots, into people who couldn't critically think. And you talk to the public now, many of them cannot be communicated with, cannot even understand what you're saying. If you talk about any even boiled down, dumbed down geopolitical terms, information, they think you're showing off and speaking some type of Martian to them. It's completely Greek to them. And my intellect, compared to, say, Thomas Jefferson's, and I've studied his writings, his mind, my intellect is a pale shadow compared to someone like Thomas Jefferson. And ladies and gentlemen, my geopolitical, sociological, psychological, military, general knowledge dwarfs 99% of people. And I am a mental midget. You see, man is slumping. Man is degenerating. Man is falling and crumbling and unraveling right in front of us. No one can deny it. And it's because we've been fed scientifically in the last 100 years, but in the last 60 with television, pure death. And they don't even have to have all the producers and directors be part of it. They were raised up in it, so they regurgitate it. And they are sexualizing our children. They are dumbing people down. They are training people to value things that don't matter. When my heart will flutter if I walk outside at night and there's a full moon and there's mist blowing through the, you know, the TV towers with their red lights flashing, and a night bird flies overhead, nighthawk circling, eating bugs. And I see a raccoon scurry across the street, and I look up to the lamp on our doorstep and watch geckos hunting. And it's just so beautiful. I almost fall down on my knees. In fact, I have actually laid down on my grass in my front yard and just watched aircraft flying and the stars. And occasionally on a clear night, you can see satellites. And I'm just in rapture with the incredible blessing of even being alive and conscious. And I look at unhappy people who've been trained to feel inadequate from birth by Madison Avenue, who are totally unhappy and feel empty because they don't have the wealth or the baubles or the trinkets of success, or they don't have their fellow man bowing down to them. And I see the public posing and everybody acting like little kings and queens.
I was a highwayman along the coach roads. I did ride.
Life is such an adventure. Consciousness is such a gift from the Creator.
Many a young maid lost her mom.
The experiences we have in life, the magic of children and their beautiful voices and their minds growing and sucking up knowledge like a sponge. Everything that is good in the world needs to be recognized as good and held up and supported and appreciated. And everything corrupt and wicked and evil needs to be resisted and called out. Learning to recognize reality, learning to recognize good from evil, is the secret to the road that leads us to liberty and fulfillment and happiness. But through liberty, we become rich. And then we become decadent, and we're entering the end of a very decadent cycle. We are at a great crossroads. I give you Carl Sagan and the Mote of Dust.
From this distant vantage point, the Earth might not seem of any particular interest. But for us, it's different. Consider again that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on the mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam. The Earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors, so that in glory and triumph they could become the momentary masters of a fraction of a dot. Think of the endless cruelties visited by the inhabitants of one corner of this pixel on the scarcely distinguishable inhabitants of some other corner. How frequent their misunderstandings. How eager they are to kill one another. how fervent their hatreds. Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe, are challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only world known so far to harbor life. There is nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. Visit? Yes. Settle? Not yet. Like it or not, for the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand. It has been said that astronomy is a humbling and character-building experience. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known.
To live in the hearts we leave behind is to never die, Carl Sagan. Folks, I am in love with humanity. I have realized many years ago that I am humanity. You are humanity. We are man. We are woman. A man and a woman individually are not humanity. We are the species. We are a union. We make children together. The magic, the majesty, the beauty, the power of that. I want humanity to succeed, not just because I want to live forever through the species, but because I love the species. I love the struggles. This is a great game, a great contest of our species to crawl up from the muck to the stars. And I want to succeed. I want to glorify the good and expose the bad. iPods, basketball teams, petty fights, garbage, that isn't what matters. Become humble when you look at the beauty of the firmament of the galaxy. Realize that you're part of something so wondrous forever.
Live from Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, it's Alex Jones.
You know, even 5-6 years ago, when mainstream media would lie about me, when people I know would lie about me, a psychopath, stalkers, people that have moved into Austin to basically try to persecute me, I would hate them at a certain level. Now, I don't even hate them. I really feel sorry for them to see how fallen they are. And I see more and more of the public who have not woken up to what's happening, because there's two different groups, those that have woken up and are becoming more enlightened, more informed, and others who are getting deeper into deception. They deceive themselves. It's really magical thinking. An example of this, because I actually looked up the numbers, and I understand talk radio, been doing it for 16 years, been syndicated for 14. Media Matters came out and said that Glenn Beck had lost a bunch of his radio stations and had fallen beneath 400. And I'm only using Glenn Beck as a case point example of media deception. We can use him as an example when he's being deceptive or when he's being accurate. But in this case, it's George Soros and Media Matters, and they came out and said he's fallen beneath 400 radio stations. He's a failure. He's going under. So I actually went to Premier. This is like 2 days ago. I noticed it's now in the news today, exactly what I discovered. It's just the facts that he has 437 radio stations and gained 88 in the last 12 months and lost 7. Ladies and gentlemen, stations are always selling, changing formats, deciding to put on local talk. I mean, that is quite frankly, losing 7 stations when you gain 88 of them. I mean, that's a number. I've looked up Limbaugh. He might gain 100 stations in a year, lose 50, 60. I mean, we gain stations more than we lose, but over time we lose stations to format changes, to other things. That's just what happens. Or new management. And they have a different idea of what they want to do. But I mean, right there is just an example of Media Matters knowing full well they were involved in deception. But they're not magical thinkers. They're cold-blooded people manipulating childlike people. It's called the false victory. They build a straw man. They say Glenn Beck is done. He's plunging. He is actually plunging on TV. But that's just because TV across the board is dying because it can't compete with the internet. That's the main reason. And I did do some poking around. He did lose a few of those stations last week. And I'm not surprised for the rant about things I can't even say on air. Sucking of sores, sexual parts. I mean, I in an attack on yours truly. And I'm actually sad for Glenn because overall, better his show be on a lot of stations out there than other ones. I mean, he at least talks about the private Federal Reserve, George Soros, the world government. But I did do some checking, and looks like he, not just because of that episode, but other vulgar episodes. That's one thing conservative radio will not put up with. I mean, I've done mild things just reporting on what other people did and had big stations drop me over the years. I've described partial birth abortion and had stations drop us. And guess what? I still do it occasionally, but there is kind of that, well, do I want to get kicked off stations or do I want to be able to cover all this other information? But I still do discuss it from time to time. But I see the George Soros crowd constantly running around saying the liberty movement's dead. The liberty movement is collapsing. The liberty movement is weak. The liberty movement is discredited. The liberty movement is violent. And then for every case of a conservative or libertarian beating up a so-called liberal, I find more than 10, I know you see this as well, of the different union thugs brutally beating people. And then a Rand Paul supporter puts his foot on a woman to hold her down because she rushed the car and threw something in it. And they thought, I mean, ladies and gentlemen, when a major senatorial or gubernatorial or presidential candidate is driving up and you run out of a line in front of cops and throw something in the car, you'll be lucky if you don't get tasered or taken to jail because they may think you're doing something violent. I mean, that's very dangerous. So a Rand Paul guy puts his foot on her, and that becomes this big sensation, remember, 4 or 5 months ago of violence. And meanwhile, union thugs in Florida, you name it, beating people over the heads with 2x4s, and it never gets on the national news. And so, again, it's all about perception, and it makes me so angry that the stock and trade of mainstream media and George Soros and others is to play on people's lack of three-dimensional or even two-dimensional thinking to deceive them. Now, that said, I don't make it my business to sit up here and attack Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity. I have had to go after Beck a bit because he tells host, that too, but I better not say anymore, because he tells a guest on his show, okay, I noticed you've been on Alex Jones' show before I had you on. I'm not going to have you on anymore if you go on his show. And I've had multiple. It's now 3 different guests say, yeah, I was told don't come on your show anymore or I won't be back. And he tells other people on the Fox network, I hear you have Alex Jones on tomorrow. No, you don't. Or you'll never be on my show again. And, you know, I mean, get out of my life, man. I've got serious things to talk about, and I don't territorialize this information. The more the merrier that wake up to the New World Order. But I was around 16-plus years ago. You've only been talking about New World Order for about 4 years. And great, but don't see me as a competitor just because I'm, you know, in a cover story in Talkers Magazine about the fastest growing talk radio in the country. That's what the industry's now admitting. Don't get mad just because there's a feature story in Rolling Stone or New York Magazine or Nightline or MSNBC. I mean, the fact is, we do have 3 million listeners a day now. We do have millions of visitors a day now to the websites. we do dwarf you on the internet, and our growth curve is going off the chart, and we're gaining about 3 AM and FM affiliates a week. So Beck can see that we're coming up on him. And look, man, I don't care. I mean, I don't see Lou Dobbs' competition or Judge Andrew Napolitano. I don't see Rush Limbaugh's competition, even though I'm up against him in this time slot. That's because 14 years ago, Ted Anderson said, we'd like you to stop doing 1 hour a day. We want you to go to 3 hours a day in this time slot. This is what stations are asking for. That's why, and I go up against Rush Limbaugh, and they go, yeah. And I said, I want to call the show InfoWars. And they go, well, we want to call it the Alex Jones Show. And I said, fine, have it your way. You know, they don't tell me what to say or what to do on this show, but they do have, at least in the past, a little bit of, you know, when we think this is the slot, this is the name of the show, do you like that idea? And I said, yes. So when I go after Rush Limbaugh, which I'm about to do, it's because I really feel sorry for him. I want to improve him. I mean, I am improved all the time by listener advice. I am improved and excoriated, rebuked by people all the time. And when it's real criticism and I see it, I'm thankful for it. Most of it isn't legitimate. It's delusional. But when Limbaugh got caught with synthetic heroin, hillbilly heroin, OxyContin, basically off the market now, it's so deadly, taking upwards of 100 pills a day, that's enough to kill roughly 8 full-size horses, it was estimated. That's how big his tolerance was. I didn't say throw Rush Limbaugh in prison. I didn't do that. I said, now it's wrong that you're for minimum cocaine sentences and heroin sentences, though, Limbaugh, which he's pushed really hard over the years. I said, why don't you now come out against at least minimum sentences, 5 to 10 years in prison the first time somebody gets caught with cocaine or heroin, crack cocaine or heroin. And he hadn't done that. I mean, he was gobbling 100 pills a day of synthetic heroin, doctor shopping to get it, totally addicted. He was sick. And that can happen to anybody. With alcohol or cocaine, heroin, anything. I didn't sit there and judge him and go, look, this big guy has fallen. This big guy is in trouble. Man, I'm going to call him a pill head over and over again, like so many other mainline conservative hosts did. I don't rush in when I see somebody big who's fallen and get gleeful about it. Unless you're somebody like Ann Coulter saying, the Japanese ought to be thankful for the radiation. It's good for them. Lady, they're now admittedly in the hospitals, and their own government says the deaths are about to begin. You need to go over there and live in the reactor, or you need to retract what you said. You know, that type of thing, I just can't think of what type of horrible person you have to be like that. Or George Monbiot, the big socialist. But all of that said, where am I going with this Limbaugh situation? Then I'm going to get back into the news. Last night, I surf around monitoring the news for a few hours, and I saw a Limbaugh clip praising the deaths in Afghanistan, basically. And I saw the title of it, and I said, that can't be true, and I clicked on it. And sure enough, and then I didn't want to just go off the audio clip because that can be edited. I went to his site and found the transcript. They put his rants up there, and there it was, bigger than Dallas, on his website. And I was ashamed that a fellow American talked like this. It freaked me out because it shows how decadent we've gotten. And I'm going to play the clip in a moment. But he said, oh, Rolling Stone magazine. And we're going to play part of the clip. We don't have time to play 10 minutes of it. We're going to play part of it. He said, oh, you know, Rolling Stone magazine, they're talking about accidental deaths of civilians. Oh, my gosh, this is terrible. Because back in the old days at Hiroshima and Nagasaki and Dresden, we wanted to kill civilians. We wanted to kill people and break things. And he basically acted like it was all manly and cool and great. Well, according to that statement, and I'm going to get into the history first before I play it, because there's multifacets to this. According to that statement, if you believe the official story of 9/11, NORAD magically stands down, 3 aircraft do maneuvers that top fighter pilots say they couldn't even do without transponders leading them perfectly into their targets, the steel buildings magically explode and shatter and collapse, even if you believe the official story, then you've got to then say, okay, well, if Bin Laden did this, and he targeted civilians, and this is what the red, white, and blue does, dropping A-bombs on people and firebombing Dresden and killing about 400,000 people, they estimate, in one night, and threatening Germany they were going to do it. And by the way, Dresden was a non-military, non-industrial city. It was known as a safe city for people to send their children away during the bombings, just like England did. The biggest majority, the biggest percentage was children. Not the majority, but the largest aggregate piece was children per capita. If it's great to kill women and children, I don't agree with that, by the way, then it was a legitimate target for Osama bin Laden. So, see, you can't have this whole hypocritical view that war, it's good to kill women and children, it's good to devastate and have Sherman-esque scorched earth. Because I remember Limbaugh and others just freaking out over targeting women and children, targeting civilians, how cowardly it was, how horrible it was. Well, the 1,000-plus drones openly say collateral damage is fine. If they kill 200 women and children and they kill one bad guy, they think it's okay. Well, then that was a financial target in a war. What do you think the globalists do when they attack a country? They bomb the government buildings, water treatment, power facilities, government systems, financial systems. Remember when Clinton bombed Belgrade? Serbia blew up TV stations with people in them? See, the truth is, I don't like doublethink. I don't like hypocrisy. Oh, it's bad when the North Vietnamese tortured our people, but it's good when we torture. Or it's bad when the Russians have been caught torturing, but it's good when our government tortures. See, this is mental illness. Oh, it's okay when Rush Limbaugh gobbles 100 Oxycontins a day, enough to kill 7 to 8 full-size horses, but when your 16-year-old gets caught with some, 5 years, 10 years in prison. See, it's okay to bomb Dresden and Tokyo and with firebombs and Hiroshima and Nagasaki with A-bombs, even after Japan was trying to surrender unconditionally. But then it's bad, if you believe the fable, for Osama bin Laden to have suicide hijackers flying to buildings. You see, this is sickening level of hypocrisy. Now, that's a side issue in and of itself. That is a complete and total side issue compared to Limbaugh's lack of understanding of history. Now, I'm going to play this clip, then we're going to come back and break down why he's wrong historically. And I'm going to go through just a brief gestalt of the history of Western warfare. We don't have time to look at other cultures. But there's a word involved called chivalry. Let's go ahead and play this clip.
The documents cover some known aspects of the troubled 9-year conflict. U.S. Special Operations Forces have targeted militants without trial. Afghans have been killed by accident. Why? That is unheard of. That is unheard of in any war, anywhere in the history of the world, that civilians have been killed by accident. That's unheard of. Do you realize what this says about us? How guilty, how rotten to the core can this country be? Innocent Afghan citizens killed by accident. In the old days, it used to be on purpose, i.e., Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Dresden. In the old days, the definition of winning a war was killing people and breaking things. In the old days, there was no such thing as a surgical strike. In the old days, you purposely killed innocent civilians. That's what war was all about. That's how you won it. But now, all of a sudden, these big WikiLeaks documents say that Afghans have been killed by accident. Whoa, the incompetence of the U.S. military.
All right. Now, history's so complex, I don't want to oversimplify this, but let me just state a fact here. There is scorched earth enslavement, salted earth systems like the Romans had, where if a country or a region or a tribe resisted, they would go in and kill all the men down to ages 10 to 8 years old. They would even then salt the earth in regional areas so they couldn't grow crops. But even most Romans said that that was immoral, and that only came later in the decline of the Roman Empire. If you look at the Middle Ages, If you look at what then came out in the Renaissance after that, armies lined up of men and they fought each other and they had rules of war and you did not target civilians. And if you did, you were executed. George Washington, that I guess Limbaugh would call a coward, would hang or shoot, and this happened, any U.S. troops that engaged in any type of war crimes, raping, stealing, any of that. Now, it wasn't until World War II that civilian population started getting targeted, and I want to tell you the story of how that happened. So no, not in the good old days, Limbaugh. Not in the good old days. This didn't start till World War II. We're going to come back and break that down.
Federal agents, we are armed!
You see, the most militarized, vicious societies always develop something called chivalry. Rules of war, because they don't want their families being overrun and slaughtered and killed. The men say, we're just going to kill each other. And may the best man win. And that is the great expression of true warriors. And I'm not trying to compare the mafia, but at least they have that code. The Italian mafia, who's been supplanted by the Russian mafia, the Mexican mafia, the rest of it. They've been legendary for not killing people's women and children. The Mexican cartels, that's who they target. And it's because in the rules of war, leave the women and children out of this. Don't drop bombs on them. Now, Hitler was a bad guy, but mainline history is a fact. He would not bomb the British cities. When the Blitzkrieg began, he would only bomb military sites, and then the British launched an attack on Berlin on civilian centers, and it was later declassified to make Hitler attack British cities, knowing that that would actually cause their morale to go up and steal them for full-bore war. And then, of course, you know, Germany was completely leveled, so was Japan. And the public bought into it because it was seen as a struggle for survival. Total war. Go back to World War I, it was men lined up killing each other in the trenches. So this total war thing that Limbaugh calls the good old days is only about 65 years old. And in the old days when the Japanese bombed cities, in China, it was called barbarous and horrible until we then did it. So the point is to round up kids and shoot them, or to put thousands of men in containers for 3 days till they die of exposure. That's torture. That's murder. That's wrong. Because then it's going to happen to our troops. And how do we then criticize it? You want rules of war, ladies and gentlemen. And to hear Limbaugh up there, this addled former drug addict who's hypocritical, getting off on war, getting off on death, and saying, you know, our military's incompetent, they need to kill people and break things and be indiscriminate. Well, if you knew anything, Limbaugh, the Pentagon doesn't have a public stance on not killing civilians because they're wimps. They want to win the hearts and minds of these occupied countries. These are guerrilla wars. These are not beating the German military. This is not a classical, you know, front-on assault. These are occupations. So that causes people to resist you. So that's why the Pentagon has a stated policy of not wanting that. Because they want to win the hearts and minds, dummy. And so you get up there and say, this is great, this is cool, this is manly. I can't tell you how many other chicken hawks, like Limbaugh, who got deferments for a boil on his rear end. I can't tell you how many of these chicken hawks think war is manly. I saw a report a few years ago about Richard Pearl, the Prince of Darkness, at a cocktail party coming up to women bragging that he ordered bombings and was manly. An obese, self-propelled stomach who couldn't do one chin-up if his life depended on it, bragging about killing people. Okay? Now, I want to play a clip of British troops beating Iraqi children. And listen to the demonic voices. Is this what the good guys sound like? This is from Iraq. Bring the kids in.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You're going to get it. Yes. Naughty little boys. Yes. 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 Oh, please, don't hurt me.
By the way, it's been reported by survivors that have escaped from serial killers, children and women, that when they're biting chunks out of them and raping them,
you little
that's the noises they make. Now, that guy's probably going to go back and be a cop in England. So that's who's going to rule over us in England and the U.S. Yes, yes, yes. We're the good guys.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, for the next 30 minutes, Bob Chapman is our guest. Then we've got Sean Stone, accomplished actor and director, producer in his own right, son of Oliver Stone, joining us. He reached out to us. We're excited to have him on with us. Jeff Steinberg will also be popping in with him, along with Alexander Wraith. It is, of course, April 1st, 2011. For the next 30 minutes, Bob Chapman is our guest, and I want to get into what's happening with the economy with Bob. Also, later in this hour with Bob, I want to get into federal agents told to reduce border arrest. Arizona sheriff says, we've confirmed this years ago, but here it is out of Fox News. Also, we have an incredible video I'm going to be playing with Bob for the PrisonPlanet.tv viewers. For InfoWarriors, it's up on InfoWars.com. Return of basketball hoops delayed again. And it's video of arrogant Department of Transportation people coming up into their yard and taking their basketball hoops away from them. This is government zoning and the incredible power trips they're on, where you're being bossed around, and the video and audio just really explains how the society's collapsing. Because I have another report here. More and more areas want you to get a license to have a garden, from Oklahoma to Oakland, California, from Tulsa, Oklahoma to this latest development. You know, they're saying you can't sell Girl Scout cookies in your front yard, you can't sell lemonade, you can't have a garden and then sell it to your neighbors. It's just absolutely incredible. So the total feudal enslavement grid, you study feudalism, that's what it is. But also the Federal Reserve following suit for the first time in decades. The EU central banks have announced they're going to have interest rate increases, and the Federal Reserve says they're going to follow them a few months after. And we're going to talk about all of that with Bob Chapman. Bob of the International Forecaster, good to have you here with us.
Well, it's very good to be back, and I missed you last week.
Yeah, I wasn't out last week. I had so much work to do. I had to take off Friday while Watson and Mike Adams sat in so that I could just get the piles of paperwork completed around here.
Well, anyway, things are popping out there, and Libby is going crazy. And on the other hand, the situation financially and economically in the United States and England and Europe continues to deteriorate. And, of course, they're using all of these distractions to keep people's minds off that. We just saw the employment report come through, bogus as usual. I haven't broken it down yet, and I'll have that early next week. And we're also getting some startling inflation figures coming out of Europe. And they're talking about, as you mentioned, raising interest rates in Europe. And all I can say is they must be suicidal, because the minute they raise rates and cut back on stimulus of one form or another, the game's over. And so it'll be interesting to see if they follow through with their warning this time that they're going to raise rates. In the United States, several people from the Federal Reserve banks have said they really should stop using QE2. And but the opinion is mixed, and Bernanke has the last word. I don't think they're going to curtail QE2, and I think there's a good chance they will still have QE3, because the recovery isn't there. If you notice, this last week, they talked about businesses getting tax breaks, and they're investing money in equipment that will do away with employees. Now, I never heard of anything so dumb in my life, but anyway, that's what they're doing. And how can you have a recovery if you're not having jobs, real jobs?
Well, it's a jobless recovering.
Exactly. I mean, we got work week 34.3 hours. That's not very good.
Stay there, Bob Chapman. I want to get into Walmart CEO Bill Simon expects inflation. He called it serious inflation coming. The Fed announcing by year's end they're going to probably raise interest rates, not just the EU. Where you see that going? I've also got Limbaugh praising attacks on civilians, saying that's the way to get the job done. We'll get your take on that as well.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
We have an abbreviated 30-minute interview right now with Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster with his amazing financial and geopolitical analysis. He normally joins us the third hour, but we've got Oliver Stone's son, the upcoming film, joining us. But he really wants to come on talking about the New World Order that he basically studied when he was in college. That's what Sean Stone, and I actually have a copy of it here, wrote his thesis on. So that is coming up. In fact, I had his bio here, guys, but I think I've pulled it out or lost it. So just print me that again or try to find it. Obviously, you won't be able to, though, while I'm busy here talking on air. So just print it again. Thank you. But shifting gears back to Bob Chapman. Bob, let's cover the financial news right now. We're being told that unemployment is dropped below 9 points, though even 60 Minutes says it's 22% nationwide, 33 in California. That was 4 months ago. All the other independent groups, you're saying between 22 and 24 nationwide, prestigious organizations that I know you've listed here on air, major financial institutions, Walmart CEO, is in USA Today, Bill Simon, expecting increased inflation and calling it serious inflation. We have the Federal Reserve announcing they're going to follow the move by the European Union central banks in the next few months to raise interest rates. Fed says they're likely to do it by end of year for the first time in modern history, following the euro instead of the European countries following the Fed's move. What does all this signify?
I think that they're testing the waters here to see whether it will be acceptable. But what they're going to have to accept, the public and Wall Street and the City of London, is a deflationary depression, because they can't function without having those stimulus funds or QE2 type injections of money from out of thin air into the economy. And this is something that's very important. 2 points here. They had the G20 meeting, and Mrs. Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, was supposed to champion an additional $1 trillion to be spent to clean up for the 6 countries that are in trouble in Europe. Not only did she say, no, we're not going to do that, she wanted to cut back the $1 trillion by $300 billion that had already been arranged for those countries in trouble. The reason why is she got destroyed, and so did the CDU, in the elections in Hamburg, which is the richest state in Germany. And that's what prompted them coming forward. The public are sick and tired in Germany, are getting whipped around and paying for everything. And they said, no more. The second thing that's really important, too, is the UN Security Council voted on the flyover block. And 3 countries abstained: China, Russia, and Germany. Very, very, very important, because that's been a united front together since the Second World War under NATO. That also means that maybe Germany is thinking of leaving NATO. That's a possibility. So there's some real disrupting things going on. And I had to put that in there because they're important.
What about the Orwellian language seems to be intensifying, and I wanted to see if you agree. Just when you think governments can't be more overt in their cartoon-level lies, they call an aerial bombardment for over 2 weeks kinetic military action. They're preparing Marines from the U.S. and England to invade, saying there'll be a stabilization humanitarian force, not military. British SAS publicly started the thing 6 weeks ago using admitted al-Qaeda forces. That's now public. So the West started this war against Gaddafi. And now they're not only lying and saying this isn't a war, they're now saying the economy has been better for almost 2 years when every real indicator shows that it's in free fall, and they put out these fake unemployment numbers of 8.8 when every other indicator, including the housing market, shows that it's in free fall.
You're right. And the summation is you're right. It's all bogus. It's all lies. It's all propaganda. It's all conditioning. But over in Libya, the special forces have been in there for 3 months. The CIA has been in there for years. Who are the guys that are rebels? They're al-Qaeda. That's who they are. And we're arming them. The man that's running it has been living in Virginia for the last 20 years.
And then this is all mainstream news, by the way, and you're right, CIA for years, it's more like 3 months, the British Special Forces were in the East, but attacking now for close to 6 weeks. But Bob Chapman expanding on all of this, what is the method to the madness? Why are the globalists doing this now?
Well, they want chaos throughout the entire Middle East, because when they go after Iran with Israel, they do not want anybody arguing with them. Nobody giving moral or succor to Iran. They want to be able to go in there, bang them, and get it over with.
As we know, Mubarak, months ago it came out, before they even overthrew him, that he said no to Iran, Egypt would not get behind it, politically supporting it. And now we learn they were telling him they were getting ready to overthrow Gaddafi, which is to his west, bordering him, and he said no to that. And then when he refused to step down, he had that stroke.
Well, Frank Wisner went in there a month before all of these episodes of recent vintage and told him, this is the way it is, the way you just explained it. And he probably told him, if you don't do what we tell you to do, we'll destroy you. And that's exactly what they're doing. The $70 billion that he stole, they're going to steal it from him. Because, you know, they're freezing everything he's got. As far as Gaddafi's concerned, what do they want? They want four water aquifers, sweet oil. They want a central bank that's not independent of these characters in Europe and the United States. The New World Order, if you may.
What's the first thing? What's the
130?
Sorry, go ahead. No. What's the first thing they've already set up? A central bank with the al-Qaeda rebels,
right,
and an oil system to fund them. And they're saying they're going to put the al-Qaeda people basically in charge and give them 30-something billion bucks.
That's right. They're going to give them part of the action because they're nothing more than mercenaries. But they want that 143.8 tons of gold so they can sell it into the market and keep the price of gold down. So they have a number of objectives here, including killing Gaddafi.
That's right.
He has gold, and he's trying to get advanced weapons from Russia, and I think Russia's going to give them to him.
That's right. Were you shocked 2 weeks ago when the Financial Times of London confirmed that he was the eighth largest owner of gold in the world?
No. I knew that he was heavy, but I didn't know how heavy. I mean, this guy is not dumb. He's very, very smart. And without this lack of air cover, he would have taken the rebels over already. I think what's going to happen, we're going to have a protracted war on land, so to speak. And I don't think Gaddafi's going to get taken down unless they send in a large, large force. And I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think they got the people to spare. And incidentally, that section that the rebels are in right now produces per capita more al-Qaeda, Taliban, terrorist types than any place throughout the world of Islam.
Now, that's according to
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, that's according to the West Point report from 3 years
that's
ago.
Right.
Now, mm-hmm. now, continuing and shifting gears, but it's still in the same vein. I want to play you a short clip of Rush Limbaugh talking about the Afghanistan massacres and the lining up teenagers and kids and killing them and laughing and giggling about it. Limbaugh says this is what the good guys do. He says our military basically should go back to World War II where they do target civilians. And my point to Limbaugh is until World War II, in the age of chivalry, for hundreds of years, the West never targeted civilians. You know, the mafia says don't kill women and children. And so Limbaugh's claiming that our military is inept because they're not killing enough civilians. Here's this clip.
The documents cover some known aspects of the troubled 9-year conflict. U.S. Special Operations Forces have targeted militants without trial. Afghans have been killed by accident. Why? That is unheard of. That is unheard of in any war anywhere in the history of the world. That civilians have been killed by accident? That's unheard of. Do you realize what this says about us? How guilty, how rotten to the core can this country be? Innocent Afghan citizens killed by accident. In the old days, it used to be on purpose, i.e. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Dresden. In the old days, the definition of winning a war was killing people and breaking things. In the old days, there was no such thing as a surgical strike. In the old days, you purposely killed innocent civilians. That's what war was all about. That's how you won it. But now, all of a sudden, these big WikiLeaks documents say that Afghans have been killed by accident. Whoa, the incompetence of the U.S. military.
All right. Bob Chapman, you're a military veteran, intelligence veteran as well. Historically, I mean, it's known as barbarous criminals target civilians. And even if some of this happened with carpet bombing in World War II, it doesn't mean this is moral or good, does it?
No, it does not. And Dresden was done by England, and that was on order from Winston Churchill, who probably seldom drew a silver breath. And the actions in Nagasaki and Hiroshima were to teach the world a lesson by the Illuminists in the United States. Don't cross us or we'll obliterate you. Because the Japanese had tried for a year to surrender, and they wouldn't let them.
Let me expand on that, because it's not hidden history. It's mainline history that Hitler, it was unprecedented for him to bomb military facilities in Poland. He then only bombed, in the first part of the Blitz, military sites in England and factories. And then the British, on record, launched a giant airstrike on civilian areas of Berlin, and it was later declassified, to get Hitler to attack civilian centers, so that, because the psych warfare chiefs in England had found that would actually make the Brits be more pro-war, and so they tricked Hitler into targeting civilian sites so that they could then target civilian sites, and that they actually did it first. That's on record. And that's something that really isn't taught, you know, in low-level history. And that's not something I don't think Limbaugh even understands.
Well, one of the problems that I continually run into among some people like Limbaugh, who talk about things that they really don't understand, and it's a lack of knowledge of history, and it goes back to ancient history. If you don't understand what people did before, you're not going to know what they're going to do next. Because people follow a general pattern. And if you don't know what they've done, you can't act on it. You can't talk about it.
Well, you're absolutely right. But, I mean, studying history, in almost every culture, you didn't target women and children. Even if you killed the men, you kept the women and children basically as slaves or to expand your tribe. And to romanticize carpet bombing Dresden that killed hundreds of thousands of people in one night, to romanticize dropping A-bombs on a defeated foe, to romanticize it, but at the same time say, if you believe the official 9/11 story, that Al-Qaeda was cowardly and barbarous to target civilians, well, under Limbaugh's rule, he must think that what Al-Qaeda did was okay.
And I would say that is a good summation.
Well,
and that's why your program is far better than his.
Well, I mean, I wish he understood this. But, I mean, look, he was never in the military. He hadn't even studied military history, clearly. He got a deferment because of a boil on his rear end. And then he's pro-war. I mean, guys that love war, and think it's big and powerful, and the guy you meet at the gas station going, I'm glad we're blowing up Gaddafi or kill them Arabs in Iran. Well, they're not even Iranian idiots. You know, these guys... I guarantee you're the type, if you said, let's go out in the parking lot with baseball bats and see who beats the other one to death, they'd start urinating down their leg, Bob.
Well, you know, it was interesting. He had a boil. When I went in and they were processing me, they found I had one of my fingers was cut off. And the doctor looked at me and smiled. He said, are you left-handed or right-handed? And I said, I'm right-handed. He said, you're hired. That was the trigger finger.
How'd you cut your finger off?
Oh, in a machine when I was younger, working in a factory.
Yeah, no, I cut mine off almost completely, but some skin. But the miracles of modern science, the weird thing is it didn't even hurt that bad. Did it hurt with you?
Well, I took off the first joint, and on my left hand, first finger after the thumb, and I grabbed it, and I cut off the blood supply. And it was like numb, and it really didn't hurt that much.
No, that's what happened to me. Yeah, it was bizarre. I mean, it hurt a little, but it was mainly just bizarre, the finger flopping around, hanging on by some meat. But I thought the bone was pretty. It was like purple and shiny.
Mine was white and shiny.
Yeah, it was really weird.
Well, we got something in common.
Yeah. Well, hey, I got mine, though. I'm sorry you lost yours, buddy. I can do parlor tricks,
I still pull the trigger with the other hand.
But it's like a parlor trick because it's numb. So, I could sit there and, like, take a lighter to it. I haven't done that, but I guess I couldn't impress people. Look, I'm G. Gordon Liddy. It doesn't hurt because I don't feel it. All right, I've digressed, Bob. We only got about 8 minutes left. I skipped the break so we'd have more time with you. TheInternationalForecaster.com. If folks want to call and get a free introductory copy of it, 800-686-2237, 800-686-2237. Invaluable information. Getting into other issues, dealing with the Fukushima situation, what's your view now on learning that reactor number 2 has completely melted down?
Well, I think probably they ought to cement them all in. That's the best possible thing they could do, I would think. They've got such problems with them. They're old. The design didn't work in the final analysis. They've got all kinds of radiation. Goodness knows how many people are going to die from it. And it's probably all over the world by now. And so what should they do? Cement them in and find another way to get the power to the area.
Well, the ongoing cover-up, the FDA said, yeah, we found radiation 2 days ago in milk and some other things, but that's the worst of it. But that was the radiation from 3 weeks ago that got here first. Now the really bad stuff, 100,000 times safe levels, is coming out. I mean, just common sense shows more intense radiation is on its way.
Absolutely. No question, and it can't be avoided. And it's very difficult for the average person to protect themselves because nobody told them it's on the way.
Bob, dealing with other issues in the economy, we see Portugal now, as you predicted 3 years ago, starting to go under. Ireland, Greece, Iceland, now they're talking about the takedown being 8 times bigger if Spain goes under than the banker payout that they call a bailout to the private bankers in Spain. If the Germans are getting ready to jump ship over having to pay off Ireland and a few other smaller countries, what's going to happen when they've got to bail out everybody else?
Well, if you remember on this program months ago, I talked about the bill will be $3 to $5 trillion, and nobody was listening. And so they came up with $1 trillion among those countries in Europe, and Mrs. Merkel was supposed to ask for another $1 trillion. She didn't. She asked for a cut because of what went on in Hamburg in the election. And Germany is sick and tired. They want out of the euro. They want out of supporting everybody. They want out. I think they want out of the European Union as well. And, you know, I lived there for a long time. I understand where they're coming from. And they're justified in feeling that way because these countries continually get themselves into trouble by spending more money than they have revenue coming in. And as I said, 14 years ago, before the first negotiations, the first treaty that they had, that one interest rate cannot service all, because each economy was at a different state, a stage of development. And you can't say that Spain, Ireland, Portugal, Greece should have an interest rate of 3% just because Germany has it. Wrong.
Because if they've been bailed out by Germany, then Germany's interest rate goes up. They're being penalized for actually bailing them out.
That's right. And you know, if they go for the $3 trillion, the solvent countries, France, Holland, Austria, and Germany, they'll all go under. And I think Ireland's got the right idea. Let the bondholders eat it. You know who owns the bonds? The Alpha Group and the Rothschilds. The Alpha Group is the black nobility in Europe for all intents and purposes. And that's why they're trying to push the Irish into honoring the bonds. And the Irish are saying, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to pay the bondholders off. And they're having conniptions over there.
And that's why they want to start new wars as political distractions. But I don't see it working this time. More and more people are identifying the banking cartel as the author of this crisis, and the globalists think they're going to get more power out of this as the days and weeks go by. More and more of the leverage begins to basically turn against them.
That's right, especially in the Bahrain, in Saudi Arabia, Yemen. Those countries are in trouble, and if one of them goes, they'll all go, and most of them are Shiites. Which Iranians are Shiites as well, with the exception of Saudi. And so I see ongoing problems that they're going to have there. How bad they'll get, I don't know, but they could get out of hand, and that would be unintended consequences.
But on the clock, we've definitely gotten a few minutes closer to economic midnight, economic Armageddon.
Oh, yes. We're going down the road. They're doing everything to put roadblocks up, to extend everything. That's why they'll have QE3. If they don't, they may as well pull a plug on the whole thing. They don't have the money to cover the debt.
Well, Bob, unfortunately,
it's America, it's a whole bunch of countries.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, and I meant to get to George Soros and his Bretton Woods 2 coming up. But by the time you join us next week, that would have taken place. We can break down this move to a new global currency. TheInternationalForecaster.com. Bob, we'll talk to you again very soon. Thank you for joining us. See you next Friday.
Can't wait. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. We got Sean Stone coming up. I'm Alex Jones.
We now take you live
to the Central Texas Command Center
in the heart of the resistance. You're listening to the Alex Jones Show.
Well, in the second half of this live April 1st, 2011 transmission, we've got Sean Stone joining us, a guy who's got more film roles and cameos than Alfred Hitchcock and is also a producer and director in his own right. He's got a new film coming out very, very soon about his personal experiences investigating Well, we're going to get into it in a moment. But then in the second half of the interview with him, or the last two-thirds, we've got two of his associates joining us, Alexander Wraith, who's involved in the new film. But also, we're going to have Jeff Steinberg, who really needs no introduction. He's somebody who's confronted the Bush people and others on their banking scams, on the death panels. He, of course, is with LaRouche Pack, one of their chief strategists and advisors. I wanted to get Jeff Steinberg on for years. Just never got around to it. By the way, I'm told Lyndon LaRouche is going to be joining us for his maiden visit. They contacted us a few weeks ago, coming up sometime next week via video Skype. But now joining us is Sean Stone, obviously son of one of the most accomplished living directors or all-time directors, Oliver Stone, who I'm also a big admirer of for the screenplays he's written. But it's great to have you here with us, Sean. I'm glad that we got hooked up.
Yeah, thank you, Alex. Thank you for having me. And I'm also an admirer of yours, the Bohemian Grove thing, when you guys broke in, what was it, 2004?
It was back in those days, yes.
Back in those days. That was, that's an heroic thing, honestly. What you did was, you know, took a lot of guts and courage, and you really exposed something that needs exposure. And, I think that this is also, you know, this is what I want to do with my life, is to, you know, to go into realms of power and try to understand, you know, the nature of this world that we live in. Obviously, if the, you know, if the power structure worships pagan gods, or if they have, you know, belief structures which are mystical or mysterious, I think we should try to understand it. And you did a great job in going there and just recording that event, that cremation of care ceremony.
Well, I appreciate that. And I mean, obviously that was a mystery I wanted to investigate. I didn't really believe it, what I'd been told, even by some insiders, until I was actually there and witnessed it. And the old cliche rings true, that truth is stranger than fiction. Now, before we get into your new film, I just want to mention in the next hour, we're going to get into your Princeton thesis that I'd actually read about previously, dealing with the Rhodes Trust, Cecil Rhodes of Rhodesia, and their plan for an Anglo-American world empire. Give us a little prelude of what's going to come up in the next hour.
Yeah, sure. I mean, in terms of the thesis, you know, I really stumbled upon that. I had various contacts like Jeff Steinberg and Dennis Speed, people who work with LaRouche. But, you know, I mainly liked them because I thought they were doing some real homework and some real research. And, you know, it's not to say that you have to agree with everything that LaRouche says, because I think he's a very brilliant man. But it's not to say that you have to become sort of an adherent of his political beliefs to necessarily look at the work they're doing. And so what happened was, they had always mentioned this guy, William Yandel Elliott, who was Henry Kissinger's mentor over at Harvard, professor there for, you know, 40 years, political emeritus of the politics department, government department. And Elliott was an interesting figure. So I thought, well, let's investigate this guy. And in looking at him and his relationships to these sort of British ambassadors and to the Wall Street, it was like the hub, really, of, I would say, the network is really intelligentsia, the academies, the Ivy League universities, meeting with Wall Street, and then government. Those, you know, those three power centers. And that's really how influence is made in the world, if you think about it. Because you have to have the elites and the academia on your side, teaching the doctrines, teaching the free market economic theories, or, you know, socialist doctrines, whatever you need. You need to go through the university system first, and then you come into government. And then government is so tightly merged and wound with Wall Street and money. Obviously, it's almost fascist to that extent. That, you know, that is really the core. So Elliott was an interesting figure, and that got me into this bigger question of the New World Order and what the Anglo-Americans were trying to accomplish from the late 19th century forward in preserving the British Empire by using America as the military arsenal, in a sense, for it.
Well, you're absolutely right. That's how they steer civilization. We have the declassified Carnegie endowments, Rockefeller endowments. They admit all of this, but LaRouche, I totally concur with your analysis. I have never seen someone whose take on things is more accurate, because I've gone out and done my own separate research. You know, 16, 17 years ago, I didn't buy what LaRouche was saying, wasn't even very familiar with him, did my own original, you know, historical research, found exactly what he was saying in the early 60s is accurate. And that was before Carol Quigley at Georgetown, Bill Clinton's mentor, wrote a book that was pro-Anglo-American establishment, admitting that it was a shadow government / corporate fascist system steering us towards a tightly controlled society. So LaRouche's research is groundbreaking and original, and I concur with it about 99%. I don't agree with some of their more socialistic type solutions. But that said, we'll get more into that coming up in the next hour. This is going to be an intriguing interview because it's covering a wide spectrum of ideas. Tell us about your new film that's coming out, that deals with your own personal experiences and what led you in these investigations to have these experiences, Sean Stone.
Yeah. In fact, as you said about the Grove, Bohemian Grove, you'd heard stories and you wanted to confirm it for yourself. And it was very similar in my case. What happened was I was at dinner in late 2009. My father was shooting Wall Street too. And so I was visiting New York for the week and did a little cameo one day role. And I was having dinner with him that night, and a young man named Alexander Wraith, who I'd never met before. And the guy was full of energy. He's a young actor and, you know, writing scripts, and, you know, he wants to make movies. And he's telling me these stories about, you know, breaking into the mental hospitals, you know, various abandoned mental hospitals. And obviously New York and Jersey, they're full of them. So there was one in particular that he said, this place is amazing. It's called Greystone. And it was the biggest foundation until they built the Pentagon. It was built back in the 1870s or 80s, in that sort of the height of the mental health craze, when they were building up all these asylums and trying to lock people away who were mentally unsound.
So a labyrinthine sprawling complex.
Exactly. Labyrinthine is exactly the way it was put to me. And it was like The Shining. He described it. It's The Shining. You go in there and it changes every time. It warps. There's something to it that, it's sort of a mystery and wrapped in a riddle inside of an enigma. So I said, all right, well, it sounds cool. I always wanted to go on a ghost hunt. Let's go, let's go on a ghost hunt. And next thing I knew, the next night, we were myself, a young girl who was a former Marine, and Alex were driving to the property. And then it was almost like as we went along, he would say, oh, yeah, by the way, this is illegal. I'm like, what do you mean it's illegal? Oh, fuck, I just realized, oh, yeah, of course, we're trespassing, right? So we're breaking in, trespassing. Oh, by the way, there's Satanists that worship here once in a while. So if you see any Satanists, don't be alarmed. What do you mean there are any Satanists? Okay, great. So Satanists come and worship here. And then, oh, yeah, in case, there's a working hospital nearby, so you might see somebody, like a patient, from the other hospital wandering around. Oh, my. Every minute was like a different, something new was added, a new element was added to the story.
Well, from my research of that facility, to interrupt, as you're driving in, most of these big institutions, they also did early mind control studies at.
Exactly. And that was an interesting issue, was the MKUltra program.
Okay, but let's get to that. I interrupted. I apologize, Sean. Continue. So you're driving in. He's kind of giving you the tour.
So he's giving, he's essentially, exactly, every minute, it's like, Wile E. Coyote's adventures, right? Like every minute there's a new threat, there's a new element. And so we basically park, we find an open door, and there's a stick on the outside of the door, which was curious, obviously, because it's like an indicator. If there's a stick on the outside of the door and you open it, the stick's going to fall off, right? So it's almost as though someone's patrolling or keeping track. And by the way, it was October 13th of 2009. So October 13th, I was thinking, Jesus, if there's Satanists here, this could really be a bad night. 13, number 13 in October, building up to Halloween. It's the inverse of October 31. The reverse of 31 is 13. So October 31 is Halloween. October 13 could be very, like, ritualistically, you inverse it, and there could be something going on tonight. So I was pretty jittery about the Satanist issue. And we go and we start to explore the corridors. And what's fascinating about the place is that it's lit. The place is lit up. And it doesn't feel abandoned. It feels like the Twilight Zone. You walk in, there's furniture, and it's literally as though they left it 5 minutes ago, and just left it as it is.
When was it abandoned?
It was over the course of 20 years, I believe, from the 70s forward. I think it was finally abandoned about 3 years ago, two or three years
ago. Yeah, because I did a little side research before the interview. Exactly. They shut down pieces of it as it became dilapidated and as mental health funding got cut in the 70s.
Right, exactly. Obviously, we're not, the intention, by the way, is, not to sort of depreciate, anyone who has mental illness or to make them feel sound crazy. In fact, I think a lot of times people with mental illness are seeing things that are real. I don't doubt that there is another world, but that's what I want to get to, is that we're searching through this place, just step by step, going deeper and deeper into the darkness. And literally we go up to the top levels, which are really dilapidated, crumbling, the roof is falling through, pitch black up there. And it's as though the place started to come alive, because all of a sudden, there's a moment where Alex goes, oh no. And he turns off his flashlight, starts running. Like he really jumped and starts running. And so I'm with the girl, I'm like, we just start running, sprinting after him in the pitch black. I don't know how we made it weaving through this darkness, down back to the first floor. And we get there and Alex is literally heaving and he looks like he's about to throw up. And he keeps saying, did you see it? Did you see her? Oh my God, did you see that? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I didn't see anything. It was this face. This woman's face, like, with her tongue sticking out. And I'm like, that sounds like a very particular kind of demon. It's like a Gorgon mask, the old Gorgon faces of Medusa. And also in the East, the demons have their tongues out. And so I'm thinking, well, this old lady he saw with her tongue sticking out. All right, let's get out of here, man. Like, We saw your ghost. You know, we need to walk away. And Alex says, no, he pulls away. It's fine. I'm fine. You know, just, he rattled me. I want to show you guys the kitchen. He starts walking. I'm like, and I'm starting to feel the energy now. Like the energy's heating up in the place in a way that you just sense it. Something is coming to life. And I'm like, why do you want to see the kitchen? I don't understand. Well, that's where they eat. He tells me that's where they eat. I'm like, oh boy, is he okay? And he just keeps walking ahead of us. I don't know if this guy's possessed, if he's crazy, if he's leading us on to something, a joke. And so he keeps going deeper. He takes us up and deeper inside. All of a sudden we're in a corridor and there's this eye, an occult eye, basically an eye that's painted on an arts and crafts style canvas with 69 written in the corners. And I'm like, oh my God, this is occult. You know, there probably are Satanists here too. I mean, where is this guy leading us? And then he leads us through a wall, and there's a death sign. It says death written on a chalkboard right in front of this wall. It's just like, if there's ever a time to run back, I said, this is it. We're not going to go here. It says death. This is, you know, everything is giving me the feeling that we're really doomed. And he keeps pulling us through. And the girl didn't want to go either, so I thought, I can't break up the group. I'm going to stay together. So we go through this wall, and now we're back into the light in this lit corridor. And we're walking, and that's when we start to, like, there's footprints on the ground, like, pretty fresh. It's a chalky ground. How do you say it? It's like construction saw, like a sawdust on the ground. So there's fresh footprints walking around. And there's these Woody Guthrie guitars all over the place that say, you know, this machine kills fascists. Because Woody Guthrie was at the hospital at one time. And it really got spooky at that point. And then we heard a footstep above us. Like someone, it felt like sounded like someone walking above us. And then a footstep very clearly behind us in the corridor. And that's when I grabbed him, like, you motherfucker, you better get us out of here now, because we can't, you know, we're really in trouble. There's someone here. And that's when he realized, you know, oh no, we really are in trouble. So we started running out, and we get to, we found a door that was open, but there was a chair positioned right in front of the door. So it was as though if we had trampled on the chair, we would have created a loud noise. So he jumps over the chair, pushes through, and we get outside and we get back to the car. And we pull away and we think, okay, it's over and that's a great experience, and then we're going to start writing a script about it. But what's really strange is the Satanist thing. I think there were Satanists there that night. Because
Now let me stop you. That's exactly what I was about to say, and I hadn't gone through the story with you yet, is that it could have been them dressed up inside of there, and he saw somebody in the dark, and then the footsteps you heard were people.
It's a very interesting thing, because what happens is the following night I go back to Los Angeles, and Alex has a man standing outside of his window.
That's Alex Wraith.
Yeah, he has a man outside of his house in a hood, like basically like a hood. It looks, and we can,
well, this almost sounds like gang stalking or something. Have you heard of that?
It is. It actually is, because he proceeded to have these guys out of his window.
Well, see, but let me stop you. Nobody would believe this, but Ventura doesn't want to get into it. Tyrell, who I think you know, doesn't want to get into it. But the harassment and stuff, the guys in suits breaking in, facilities getting broken into, the threats, the CIA trying to mess with them. And basically, that's part of CIA mind control, is they'll put somebody on PCP, bring them to, dressed up in devil outfits to freak them out. I mean, that's what this kind of sounds like. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, because it was definitely Satanists do consort there. And I mean, Alex has told me experiences where he's been to a couple of these mental hospitals, and they're trying to conjure demons. That's very clear. And so
they believe, because of the negativity, and I've seen mainline news reports on this, that Satanists are always breaking into them because they believe the negativity will help them get this power.
Yeah, it has to do with, there's a mixture of things. It might be part of the energy that's been created in this location. It's been trapped there, obviously, as you said. Yeah, it's a very negative location because of the history of it, the amount of pain, suffering. Also, don't forget that if these patients did bring any demons, so let's say that these patients were haunted by shadows, things from the sort of the fourth dimension and beyond, right? If they had these shadows on them and talking to them as they whisper in your ear, I mean, this is known as the jinn, and the Arabs are very clear. And
every culture, yeah.
Yeah, and the jinn is very real to the Arab. You talk to almost any person from Arabia to Iran to Lebanon, and, you know, you say jinn, they freak out. It's not a joke. To us demons, we laugh, but it's taken very seriously. So if these people did have these sort of jinn shadow things as paranormal activity showed the shadow pretty clearly. That's what a shadow would be. It's you don't really see much of a substance. It's just a vapor. Then these shadows are talking to them, and then these people come and they're locked inside of a mental hospital. Now, let's say they die there or they leave there, and the shadow stays on. The shadows are now like almost like a consort. Like
so that's the theory: is it becomes like a ghost yard of ghost, almost like, you know, pirate ships kind of gathering at a secret island. It becomes like a graveyard for ghosts.
Indeed, exactly. A ground, like you've created a portal in a sense. You know, it's like Ghostbusters time, but you've created.
And then the researchers think that attracts more. You know, I never get into things like this on air. Even though everybody's got stories. I mean, I've had a few experiences in my life. My mother has, especially at our home place out in East Texas. Everybody talks about it. And it's certain places, especially prisons, things like that. We'll be right back with Sean Stone. We're going to continue with Sean Stone, a writer-director in his own right. Throughout the entirety of the next hour, we're going to get into the Federal Reserve, the monetary system, got some of the folks from LaRouche Pack coming on. But he's got this upcoming movie about his experiences, Greystone, coming out. And I never get into this stuff because if I can't prove something 100%, I don't cover it. But pretty much everybody's had experiences, every culture, something's going on. And during the break, Rob Dew, one of our great video editors and camera guys, ran up to me and told this experience just real fast. And we're going back to Sean Stone to get his take on this. Tell folks the story you just told me.
Sure. Yeah. My band, we were having a band practice one night, and it was the middle of a song. We were jamming along, and we were doing a great version of it. And nobody was singing, and then all of a sudden we hear this scream come through the PA, and I mean, it sounded unearthly, and it sounded like pain, like horrible pain. And I look up, because I thought maybe one of the singers had done something. I look up at him, because we have two singers in the band, and he's just playing his guitar, and he starts looking around. And then I look over at the other singer, and she's not doing anything. She's looking at me like, because they thought I did it. And then all of a sudden we felt this presence. I felt this presence, and then the singer confirmed it. She felt it too. I felt this thing go through me, and I got huge goosebumps. Like I've never had like that before.
Now tell the rest where you were practicing.
Okay, this is what's interesting. It was a on First Street in South Austin, and it used to be a children's home where they would take. It looks like a nursing home type setup, long hallways with little rooms, but it's where they kept kids who were, you know, mentally disturbed and stuff like that. So, I mean, it totally ties in with what's going on.
And is that a place where bands practice or something?
Yeah, they've turned it into band rehearsals.
Because I've heard of that place.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting. There's a lot of, you know, mainly metal bands, but, you know, we're sort of like the nice hippie band.
Well, there you go. And I'm not going to get into any of my experiences. I'm just going to leave that alone. But Sean Stone, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think we don't quite understand is how this white noise thing works. Insofar as I consider the universe in terms of energy, right? I mean, if all of existence is really just an energy phenomena, and matter itself, as we know, is a very slowed down frequency of energy. But if these things are, let's say, of a higher vibration and higher density, they're beyond our perceivable eye. Maybe they move simply too fast. I mean, a bullet moves too fast for the eye to see. So they could be moving too fast for us, however you want to put it. And they're able to ride certain waves the same way, you know, you could ride various bands for radio stations or whatnot. I mean, I've had demons call me and a various caliber of voice actually talking to me. I mean, sometimes it sounds like a devil, very, you know, just kind of laughing and toying with you. But once it was actually a really interesting night where the thing was very clear and very, very human, and it was just talking to me and knew exactly what I was doing. I was in my apartment.
But how do you know? Here's the deal. How do you know it's not a government psyop because you're a successful actor? Your dad's one of the most famous directors out there. I mean, there's cases of government doing this. How do you know some of the people that invited you to that former insane asylum? How do you know they didn't have people there to set you up?
Well, no one invited me into the insane asylum. That was a break-in. I mean, that was really illegal. And Alex and I did it, secretly. No one would really known.
How do you know Alex didn't set it up? I'm going to ask him that when he joins us.
Well, you can ask him. It's a pretty complicated thing to do because the place is so big, too. You know, at the end of the day, it's tough. I mean, unless you're following someone, you'd have to be really a trickster, and I think you'd have to be a genius, honestly, to actually set this stuff up, because I've been through experiences with him where I've seen a girl get possessed, a couple girls, two or three get possessed.
And that's because you've been working on this movie, researching this stuff.
Yeah.
Has it increased the amount of activity you're seeing since you've been focused on it?
Yeah, I think it increases it. We have to remember one thing, like we deal with the Bohemian Grove, for example. I mean, there's a reason these guys are doing this pagan style of worship. They are trying to conjure something.
Oh, by the way, we've got to go to break, but you're right. People could say this is just a play, but I was there with those 1,000 men. They were getting off in it. They were on in religious rapture. It was like going to a holy roller church where they're getting into it. They were in rapture. Sean Stone, stay there. We'll be right back in 60 seconds.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
All right, for the next 30 minutes, we're going to continue in this discussion that is seldom trodden here on my broadcast, the paranormal, things like that. But we're interviewing on IMDb, it's Secret Stone. I think they've changed the name of the film to Greystone. And it's from their own personal experiences, Sean Stone. Again, more cameos than Alfred Hitchcock, director, producer in his own right, his father, Oliver Stone, and Alex Wraith, his friend, who he's co-writer, co-creator of Greystone. And we'll also talk to him about when hopefully we're going to see this film hit. Alex Wraith will be joining us coming up in the next segment. Then we're going to shift gears, continuing with Sean Stone, and have Jeff Steinberg on to get into the Cecil Rhodes whole system and this whole New World Order system. We're going to go to Alex here in the next segment. But in the 4 minutes we've got left in this short segment, Sean Stone, other points you want to make about Greystone is going to be called Secret Stone, Greystone. When do we are going to see this film? Where can we check it out on the web? IMDb, what should we do?
No, it's almost as though, you know, the forces of darkness are not exactly happy we're revealing something, because I think it's very honest, and it's been a very tough film to make. We've had a few setbacks in terms of financing falling through, but the film is cut, so we're just working through finishing it, and then you know, ideally toward the end of the year we should have something at least starting to come out. I'm not sure what venue yet, but we'll get theatrical sooner or later. It's everything's a process, especially in the independent film.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
it really is tough.
Now you got interrupted by the break. You were getting into Bohemian Grove, Skull and Bones, admitted worship of Lucifer, the elites obsessed with numerology, voodoo. I even heard of all people, Michael Savage saying yesterday, he wasn't joking, he believes the royal family's into the occult. Multiple British prime ministers, Tony Blair's in major newspapers, being possessed by a spirit, flopping around on the ground. His wife's a witch. I mean, this is mainstream news, folks. Just Google Tony Blair the occult. You'll get all the mainstream news. They are into this. Why do people in power positions, why so often are they Hitler, you name it, obsessed with the occult?
I think it's clear. I think it's biblical. Think about the fallen angels in the Book of Enoch. The concept that, you know, when Lucifer and the army of the fallen come to Earth, they become the so-called watchers. They teach. They come to copulate with female women and to teach man the mysteries, to teach him magic, to teach him metallurgy, to teach him the crafts of, you know, for warfare and for politics. They are the various civilizations of old talk about these gods who give them the information for agriculture, for example, right? The great solar teachers, the great white Anki, for example, or the sun god of the Mayans and these various cultures. They're all gods, right? So imagine that they're not, it's not about alien or not, it's just it's something of a higher order, of a demonic sort or angelic, perhaps in its positive aspects, but in its negative aspects it's demonic. And if these fallen are separated from God and they are the rulers of this earth, the secret rulers, the shadow rulers, that makes more sense to me in terms of conspiracy, because the conspiracy is so far reaching and ongoing. How can you maintain this? People ask about centuries and bloodlines. Why do bloodlines maintain their power and their interest? I mean, I know certain people, certain families that tell me, oh, if your money doesn't go back to pre-1400, you're nouveau riche.
Yeah.
Now think about that. I mean, what kind of world do we actually live in? I mean, most of us really live blind and in this kind of existential crisis day to day. That's the way that we're meant to live.
More blind than the atheist.
And no one is more blind than the atheist. That's very true. Because faith is the one thing that kept me alive, I'm sure, throughout this entire journey into that realm, was the pure faith that, you know, in God and trust in Him. And, you know, His words, Christ's words, I always invoked, because ultimately I know that protected me in the very dark times from very scary things that happened and very malevolent forces.
Yeah, well, you also come from a powerful family, and that attracts this type of stuff as well. We'll be right back. Like for like, birds of a feather fly together. Sean Stone's our guest. Stay with us. Alex Wraith joining us as well.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Well, Sean Stone, the maker of Greystone, an upcoming film, son of Oliver Stone, actor, producer, writer, director in his own right, is our guest. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we're going to shift gears into his thesis at Princeton dealing with the New World Order, Cecil Rhodes, Anglo-American establishment, Rhodes more well-traveled, more of this world. But as they say in Shakespeare, there is more in this world, Horatio, than just the things that are in your books. But going back to Sean Stone, Sean, what does your dad, Oliver Stone, think of this work you're doing? You were telling me that you met Alex at some type of event with your dad, Alex Wraith, we're about to go to. What does Oliver Stone not just think of the paranormal investigation you're doing, but also your thesis at Princeton years ago with the New World Order? Obviously, he knows about the hidden establishment as evidenced by JFK and other seminal works he's done.
He's actually doing a history series right now, a 10-part history series or 12-part for Showtime, and it's called The Forgotten History of America. And he's getting into some of these things because he's focusing on mostly the Cold War period, but from World War II for the most part forward. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't want to speak too much, you know, for him, but I think, you know, the most important thing is at the end of the day, he's an artist. And I think he would not consider himself, you know, politically driven insofar as he feels that there's a certain obligation you have to society. And I think he feels, you know, that Greek conception of a society that he wants to help in his quest for truth, and that he can do that by being an artist. And I think he encourages me insofar as it's a very difficult, obviously, business that we're in, film, because you really don't know from day to day where your next project's going to come from, where your money's going to come from, your paycheck, you know, because there's always droughts. But at least I know that he encourages this ultimate quest for truth and a desire to sort of serve society through, if it's through art, if it's through storytelling, then so be it. However you can be of service and be of aid to your culture.
Sure. Well, we didn't get you here to just talk about your dad, but obviously it's fascinating. You watch the film Any Given Sunday, where all the football teams have names like Templars, Aztecs. We see all-seeing eyes on the backs of the football helmets. I mean, obviously your dad's letting everybody know he really knows what's going on.
Well, less than you may think. I think a lot of it has to do, you know, this is why the paranormal realm is quite interesting, because, you know, a lot of what artists channel is unconscious, and they, you know, it's part of that so-called collective unconscious of Jung talks about.
Jungian psychology, yes.
Yeah. This issue is a collective unconsciousness, and when I think my father would say is that he draws, you know, the doors, for example, right, is very imbued with symbolism that could be interpreted as magical and mystical. But fundamentally, I don't think my father really got into that realm, and nor does he necessarily want to know too much about it. I don't want to speak for him, but I don't think that he may know as much as you're implying about secret societies.
Sure.
And I think he doesn't want to, but he does channel it, because we all have this reptilian brain, let's say, and we have our pineal gland, and we're able to, through meditation, and to actually, you know, hone in on certain energies and waves that are around us, and they're imparting information.
Yeah,
to
well,
us.
That's the 100 monkey system. They found that monkeys in a research lab 3 miles away in the Caribbean, once they've taught the other monkeys at another facility 3 miles away, magically the other monkeys suddenly are able to do the same task without being taught it. That's been proven over and over again. I just think about, didn't your dad write Scarface?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Scarface, Tony Montana saying, it's the banks. They had it for 1,000 years. They'll have it in 1,000 years. They're the one laundering the money. They're the, I mean, there it is, government drug dealing. I mean, he's obviously super smart, that's all I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, he's very intuitive and very intelligent. I think sometimes it's like, I think sometimes he maybe doesn't want to run into certain, you know, at the end of the day, you kind of have to make your deals with the devil in a sense if you want to keep working. So he may not, you know, he may not want to be as overt in attacking.
Sure, just here's a big blockbuster movie where the State Department's meeting in South America with Tony Montana about assassinating somebody from the UN to cover up government drug dealing. I mean, I'm just saying, wow, and just giving him some props there. Shifting gears to your associate, Alex Wraith, why don't you introduce him again instead of, he's got a long bio here with films and research and screenwriting, but introduce Alexander Wraith.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm, as I said in the beginning, I met Alex at a dinner with my father back in 2009. He's a good friend of my dad's, and I had never met him before. So I was in New York for Wall Street for one day shooting a scene, and we all had dinner that night, and Alex was going on about these various projects that he was putting together as a writer, and he was breaking into these mental hospitals and you know, trying to shoot a little movie, like, you know, really candid camera style. And I loved, and I just loved his energy, and I thought, let's go in. I'm curious about this this realm, this paranormal realm that I've always been curious about, but I never had experienced in any way. I never had any phenomena throughout my life, and I was 24 at the time. So I went with Alex that the next night, and he's just a very intrepid adventurer and very, you know, very courageous and always, you know, willing to take a leap and dare and live it and experience it and, you know, never backing down from a challenge. So we went and we had these whole series. That was, you know, Greystone was only the beginning of experiencing haunted phenomenon and going to mental hospitals.
Well, we're definitely going to have you back on in the future with Alex to break down some of the other experiences. Alex Wraith joining us. Alex, how did you get into all this? I mean, how did you begin investigating this?
To tell you the truth, Alex, it's kind of like the way you go out and, you know, you guys hit up the Bohemian Grove, and it's for that same feeling. It's that same, you know, to get that, not rush, but to explore, to be an explorer, a modern-day explorer, like to go into the adventure unknown. You know, when you go into a building or when you go into tunnels or when you go into an area that's unexplored and no one's really there, you get an essence of, like, of just conquering, you know?
The final frontier.
Exactly.
The fourth dimension.
That's it, man, the fourth dimension.
Literally.
By the way, that Einstein's calculations proved. So continue. Tell us about the film Greystone.
Okay, well, Greystone, basically, we came up with this concept around at the same time as Paranormal Activity. Paranormal Activity was, you know, a cool film, cool concept about entities and all that stuff, but Greystone is actually real. If you Google or YouTube Greystone, it's a building that existed. It was built in the 1800s, had thousands and thousands of patients, you know, and these patients went through hell, man. They, you know, basically what medicine...
No, they pioneered lobotomies there. I mean, I've seen, before I ever heard about you guys in this, I've seen the mainline reports of what a hellhole this place was.
Oh, my God. If you see the videos and what they did to these people and how they learned and how they experimented and the confusion and the complete chaos in medicine and whatnot, it's just really, it's heart-wrenching. And, you know, over 7,000 people died in this one building. So you can imagine the energy you feel when you step foot on this property and you're in the woods in the dark and it's 2 o'clock in the morning and there's, you know, you're looking around and it's heavily guarded and there's brush and there's deer running around. You know, you have no idea and you hear things and all of a sudden you enter this colossus of a live entity with, you feel the eyes staring at you. You know, and this is what it's about. This is what we're trying to convey to people and to wake people up, you know, to wake up their spiritual side and to see.
Well, I always go with the most probable, and I'm no doubt there's spiritual things going on. And I know the CIA with Dr. Ewing Cameron and Dr. Jolyon West and others did have massive mind control going on at many of these facilities, and you said the lights are still on in many areas there. I've seen news articles about it. Couldn't it be that you guys walked into basically a CIA mind control operation?
Well, listen, the government did a lot of testing there, whether it be with Marines, whether it be with LSD and super soldiers, as if you want to call it. But there was definitely a lot of testing done in these facilities. A lot of that's why they have these underground tunnels. You know, they have 20 miles of underground tunnels connecting to various buildings around the entire area. So they would do experiments, they would do what they had to do, and then all of a sudden no one would know anything about it because these patients would be wielded underground. There's files, there's articles. This place was just left. They locked it up, they boarded it up. There's videos, there's tapes. You know,
I've seen news photos of it with filing cabinets, couches. Normally government doesn't do that. Why did they leave it intact?
I think personally that things still go on in this place because, you know, the fans still work, the lights still work. There's lights in the, you know, we were just in the catacombs a couple weeks ago, and there's lights in the catacombs, man. This is like, you know, two stories below ground.
Well, look at the movie Conspiracy Theory back in the mid-90s with, of course, Mel Gibson. In that movie, the government mind controller takes him to an abandoned mental institution.
Right. Exactly. Now, if you think about it, what better place? Who's going to go look there? You know? Who's going to go look there? You have all the signs.
Well, look, in Eastern Europe, it came out. Hundreds of ghost sites at former mental institutions, Sean.
Yeah. So what are you saying? The ghost sites at the former mental institutes, meaning what?
I don't know. It's just strange to see that congruency there, that it's just the government likes to use abandoned mental institutions.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, I mean, it's a great place to hide bodies, that's for sure. like Alex said, who's going to look? It seems to me like it would be, yes, if you were doing like, the greatest game, certain experiments, yes, you could do them in controlled ways, but it's not really functional insofar as, you know, everything's run down. The furniture is run down. The equipment is run down. It's not, we would have seen something, I think, if there was like a room that was still being used with very elaborate machinery. That's a different style of test. You know, I think that's what you're talking about is a different style, like modern day MKUltra.
You really think this is some type of spiritual vortex?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. 100%.
Well, the pictures of the people that we have are not human, that's for sure. Human-looking thing.
Well, I can't wait to see this film. We're going to come back with a final segment on this subject with Alex Wraith and of course, Sean Stone. And then we're going to continue with Sean Stone and get one of the head guys from Lyndon LaRouche's organization on. I've never had a mix this wild on air. We'll be right back. Infowars.com. Well, an unconventional Friday second half of radio transmission. I'll be going into overdrive to cover other financial and world news dealing with Libya, Delaware neighborhoods. The government's coming in and stealing out of people's yards and cul-de-sacs their basketball hoops and then screaming at the slaves, letting them know they can't have them. I'm going to play that if I have time as well. Alexander Wraith, director, producer, actor, is also a guest with us, working with Sean Stone on the film Greystone. That we'll be getting a look at very soon. I can't wait to see it myself. We're going to be shifting gears, though, into his research that he did, his thesis at Princeton on the New World Order as intended by Rhodes Trust to be an Anglo-American empire. But finishing up in this short segment, long segment coming up, other points, Alex and Sean, that need to be made about your research and what you discovered when you looked into Greystone and what that led you to.
I think the most important thing that we all have to remember is that this is real. You know, people always look on the internet and watch movies, and it's fantasy to them. But this is flat out in your face, man. I mean, it opens up your senses, it opens up your spiritual side, and it unlocks certain parts of you. It literally will change you as a person and as a human being. You know, when you go into this realm and you venture and you experience these entities, so. We have to always, you know, the most important part about this film is please, whoever watches it, understand that it's an actual film and these are actual events. This is not like some made up, you know, handheld little project for fun. We're diving into like some deep territories and we're getting in deep, you know?
Well, Sean, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. It's very dangerous. I mean, what happened in the night was pretty amazing, actually. Alex was over here with a girlfriend of ours, and the three of us were basically like, you know, about to go to sleep. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and the doorbell rings, and we go to answer the door. And it's strange because in my building you can't get up without having the phone, the doorman call up in advance. So we go to the door, and no one's outside. Just go back to, okay, fine, you know, it's strange. Go back to bed, and I get a phone call from an unknown number. And I'm like, oh no, this is it. Like, usually they call me from an unknown number when these demons call. It's an unknown number. So I'm like, go get the camera. I'm going to record this. As soon as I said that, the phone shut off. So I get back in bed, on the verge of falling asleep. And boom, the door slams inside of the room by itself.
Yeah.
No wind. It just slams. I mean, it's a big door. Everyone jumps. So we run. Oh, Jesus, what's going on?
Well, yeah. Let me bring this up. Was this stuff happening before you got involved with Alex?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. So the point is that it's become very intense, and it's almost as though, like, the more you're aware of it, your knowledge protects you. But on the other hand, you know, it does make you more powerful insofar as you're...
Well, no, they say you got to invite the vampire in, but once you've invited it in by getting into it, like when you buy the Ouija board, that's when this reportedly starts. But, I mean, Alex, I'm not trying to put you on the hot seat here, but notice this starts when you meet, through his dad, Oliver Stone, you meet Sean Stone, you take him to this abandoned mental institution, and then he sees these things, and he said it could have been people that were inside there posing as this. I'm not trying to, you know, say you're a bad guy here, but, I mean, maybe people are playing you, maybe they're manipulating you, or this could be a setup somehow.
No, I completely admit. I completely understand it, and you know, this is a relevant point. But you have to understand that the artist alone sees the spirit, and when he talks about it, and when he explains it, and when he takes it, and when you experience the essence of it, everyone else sees it. That's the thing. It's you know, Sean to me is a great guy, and he's very courageous because of the fact that I've taken probably 20 to 30 people to this place, and I'm talking. I'm talking about SWAT team guys. I'm talking about, you know, I have a lot of friends that are in law enforcement. They wouldn't even enter the building, Alex. These guys look at the building. Maybe one guy went inside. He jumped right out the window. So when Sean goes into this place, and I can see fear in his eyes, and I can see, you know, he's very, very hesitant about going in, but he actually takes the next step.
Well listen, step. I'm going to be in the East soon. I want to be taken there.
I'll be more than happy, man. With pleasure. It'll be amazing.
Sean, will you go with me there again?
Let's do it. Let's go with the camera. Let's see,
let's go.
That's a great idea, man. That's a wonderful idea.
Let's do it. Where is this located again?
It's in Morristown, New Jersey.
Okay, because I'm going to be in New York in June for the Talkers keynote. I'm not kidding around. If it fits in with your schedule, I'm ready to go in, just like Bohemian Grove.
That would be awesome. Amazing, man.
Me and Ventura have been talking about trying to check out Skull and Bones, but I shouldn't talk about that. But I'm ready. Let's go.
That guy got footage of Skull and Bones a few years ago.
That was the guy at New York Observer, Cockburn.
Yeah. He got the footage from above, right? He stole some footage. That was pretty cool.
And they're
stuff.
Like, Satan, give us power, yeah, sacrifice. Yeah, yeah. Ah, Satan, give me power.
Yeah.
This is where Bush is hanging out. Yeah, no, this stuff goes on. It's crazy. Well, I'm watching you here on video Skype, Sean. You look like somebody who's not engaged in baloney. You look genuinely electrified and freaked out. Something's going on here. Maybe government psyops with HARP or something. Alex Wraith, great having you on. We'll talk to you again soon. We're coming back with Sean on the other side, shifting gears into the Anglo-American establishment. Stay with us.
From the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
Well, Sean Stone, an accomplished director, writer, dozens and dozens of film roles, more cameos. Aaron Dykes made the joke than Alfred Hitchcock. He's riding shotgun with us for the rest of the hour. I'm going into overdrive next hour. We may just keep these guys unless they get exhausted. I've always wanted to get Jeff Steinberg, a senior editor of the intelligence review, executive intelligence review on. You know, I remember first reading that 16, 17 years ago and not knowing if it was accurate, and then doing my own research over the years and finding just how on spot they were. Now, I'll be honest, I don't completely agree with Lynn LaRouche's political solutions. But I do agree with the political analysis, and they've been on the forefront of exposing fractional reserve banking, the Anglo-American British banking structure, the predicting the wars they were going to launch. And what was fun about getting Sean Stone on is he said, I want to get Jeff Steinberg on. And that's great, because the phone call to him resulted in LaRouche is going to be joining us via video connection for the TV viewers at PrisonPlanet.tv and the radio listeners sometime next week, we're going to again be talking with Jeff Steinberg and Sean Stone throughout the rest of the hour. Sean, I noticed that at Princeton, your thesis was on the Anglo-American establishment, Cecil Rhodes, their admissions of this plan for world government 90, 100 years ago. Now you can see it being established. It's not a new world order. It's an old world order. Break that down and why you wanted to get Mr. Steinberg on with you.
Wait, the question being about the thesis or about...
All of it. I mean, the thesis is what LaRouche is doing, yeah.
In two minutes, it's like the O'Reilly factor, right? I just love the fact that you actually take time to actually talk to your guests. And what's interesting to me is actually, if you think about how the brainwashing works in this country, the media talks so quickly. If you go on a show like O'Reilly or Hannity and Combs or whatnot, you know, there's no time to actually have any kind of conversation. So there's, you know, the idea of actual debate or a public debate in any kind of, in any conception of democracy, you know, there's time for synthesis, there's time for rebuttal. It doesn't exist in that form. Some people think that's democracy, you know, and then, you know, you get someone like LaRouche, who, you know, I frankly admire for his, you know, for his courage. You know, he's an outsider, but he's also inside. You know, he knows the establishment guys, and they hate him. And I know people who, yeah, frankly, I don't have allegiance to anyone, because at the end of the day, I feel, you have to, you know, I believe in the Republic of the United States. I believe in our Constitution, and I want to see that prevail in the coming world. So when I heard LaRouche's work, I was skeptical at first, but step by step, I did my own research, and I wanted to sort of, you know, I always want to follow up and find out for myself if I agree with it. And then, you know, you continue the argument over and over. But the point is that why is it that someone like LaRouche doesn't get out into any kind of mainstream format? Well, there's a reason for it, because, you know, certain people working from the top down, let's say, have basically put a mandate. Yeah. He cannot be put into any kind of public forum for discussion, even when his people are out, you know, denouncing Obama, and they'll have pictures in New York Times of his people, but they won't even mention it's his people.
Well, Sean, I remember, I've watched videos, LaRouche interviews in the early 60s, breaking it all down before Carol Quigley, who was on the other team, admitted, you know, the head of Georgetown Political Science, Bill Clinton's mentor, admitted everything LaRouche had said 5-6 years later in Tragedy and Hope. So there's no doubt LaRouche and LaRouche Pack's analysis of the problems is the most piercing and deep I've seen. I've learned a lot from it. Webster Tarpley, who's a routine guest, came out of that whole camp with his own perspective. And so stay with us. I want to bring in here, well, before we go to Jeff Steinberg, what was your awakening like as you did your thesis on the Anglo-American establishment? In a minute or two, sum that up.
Yeah, my interest was, again, this figure of William Yandel Elliott, who was allegedly Henry Kissinger's mentor at Harvard. He was his thesis advisor for Kissinger, as well as he was influential with people like Zbigniew Brzezinski, Sam Huntington, that whole politics department at Harvard. In fact, he was influential for people like McGeorge Bundy and the... I think it might have been McGeorge, or was it the other Bundy, because there's the family, right? But the point is, it's this old Boston Brahmin kind of crowd, right? The people who are Harvard establishment guys. Yandel Elliott was there for 40 years, government department, political, you know, this is a powerful position to hold. And, you know, you obviously have influence on young minds. And being at Princeton, you know, what was amazing to me is that people don't realize, they think you're getting a good education, and yet what they don't teach you is just as important as what they do. You know, if they're giving you, in the economics department, it's giving you a basic analysis of economics as either socialist in the Marxist conception or free market doctrinaire in the Adam Smith conception, you're not studying American history. Because Hamilton, and this tradition of Hamilton, Matthew Carey, Henry Carey, Lincoln, the Whig Party, is an American system of economics, was completely anti-Marx and anti-Smith.
a totally different third rail, and then you learn there's many other selections as well. They're limiting the paradigm.
Exactly. So the idea of the paradigm is being controlled through universities was key to me. And I thought, okay, so let's look at Yandel Elliott. Who, look at his connections. He's a he comes out of the Vanderbilt and the sort of Tennessee network that probably designs Al Gore years later, because they're really agrarians. They're like very much anti-industrialization. They're very, you know, they live in this sort of this lost cause, romanticized Civil War era, right? And this is his background. Then he goes to Oxford and, as a Rhodes Scholar. And I also went to Oxford for one semester, or for two terms. But I mean, not to say that I was, it's not to say you going to Harvard makes you an evil person. But the point was that he was brought into the Rhodes Scholarship for a reason, that he was being given a certain orientation in life. And I wanted to study his orientation to political philosophy, to politics, why he was advocating, why this guy in America was advocating the continuation of the American, of the British Empire, essentially through the UN. You see, the initial conception for the British point of view, not necessarily Roosevelt's, but British point of view of the UN, was we preserve the colonies by basically, you know, by making them part of this UN mandate. And if we can use the UN as this forum, you know, we can go towards a world government and never really relinquish the colonies and use our free market models of corporate monopolies and mineral extractions and whatnot to maintain a constant oversight over these newly independent countries, right? I mean, the irony of the Cold War is that Britain and France never relinquished their colonies at the time of 45, and yet Stalin is supposed to relinquish Poland, and yet they still the British and the French have still a quarter of the world, but we're making a big deal about Poland. It's like, think about the nonsense. Think about the illogic of this argument.
Well, it's the hypocrisy of calling this new war not a war, but kinetic military action. Ground forces they're talking about putting in being humanitarian force, though they come with weapons. Going to Jeff Steinberg, a writer for the Executive Intelligence Review, their senior editor, LaRouchePub.com. Jeff, is that the best website to give out?
Yeah, LaRouchePub.com, and then there's also LaRouchePac.com, where you're going to find an enormous amount of video, news material, background documentation. That site is updated 3, 4, 5 times a day.
Well, Jeff, it's good to have you here, and at the same time with Sean Stone, what a Alex Jones, Sean Stone, and Jeff Steinberg, what a mix of people. Overall, we've given some of the background here, but it's clear that the predicted global slide into hyperinflation, currency collapses, and the Anglo-American establishment trying to launch new wars to get themselves out of it, that's been so predicted by you and LaRouche and others in detail, is now becoming reality.
Absolutely right. And the problem that they've got is that the international financial system is so hopelessly bankrupt that they can't carry out enough hyperinflation to bail out their bubble. So we're in a unique moment where they are in trouble, and where the only thing that really threatens them in a serious way is the prospect of the United States returning to its senses and going back to our Republican roots and wiping out this financial bubble. Within the next several months at the most, by no later than June, Bernanke is going to be faced with the unenviable situation of having to announce QE3, quantitative easing, take three. And the numbers I'm getting are that he's going to have to announce at minimum another $1 trillion taxpayers bailout through hyperinflationary printing by the Fed to prevent the blowout of one or more of the big six New York banks. And when that happens, there is going to be a revolt, even from inside some of the regional Federal Reserve presidents, who know that we're already in a hyperinflationary crisis.
That's right. The Dallas head of the Fed is sounding like a Jeff Steinberg or Lenin LaRouche just last week, and there's only so many economies that they can suck in, and so many taxpayers they can sign on to their debt. When you look at the 1,000+ trillion in the aggregate in derivatives, this is impossible. We had Davos 3 months ago demanding 100 trillion in additional liquidity.
Exactly. And you're right. Richard Fisher from Dallas, Bullard, the St. Louis Fed president. president 2 days ago flipped sides. He was a big backer of Bernanke. He's now gone the other way.
That shows they're scared. That's scary.
That's right, exactly. Charles Evans, head of the Chicago Fed, another big booster of Bernanke's hyperinflation, has also suddenly gotten cold feet. So there's going to be a fight on this. And this time around, you're going to have to deliver a real no. And the point that Mr. LaRouche has been making for quite some time is that there are two things that have to happen if the United States is going to survive this fiasco. Number one, you have to go back to Glass-Steagall in the full sense of the word. You've got to actually re-separate out the commercial banks from the gambling casinos that the merchant banks and hedge funds and brokerage houses have become. And by doing that, what we intend to do is just simply wipe out that $17 or so trillion in bailout by taxpayers and let Wall Street sink into the Hudson River.
Well, that's what's amazing to interrupt. Then I want to get Sean's take on it and continue. We'll go into overdrive because stations carry the fourth hour. If you gentlemen can do it, if not, we'll end it there. And I'll just come back. But I remember the BBC, the Times of London. In fact, let's put it on screen if we can find it. I'm springing that on my guys. The headline 3 or 4 months ago was foreign bank should run Ireland. And the head of their private central bank said, yes, this isn't the Irish debt. We are paying off foreign banks so they don't go under, but it's good to have foreign banks run us. They're just flaunting it, almost hiding in plain view how asinine this is, Jeff.
That's exactly right. In fact, the Lisbon Treaty was a suicide pact that was imposed on all of the formerly sovereign governments of Europe. And if you remember correctly, the Irish voted no on Lisbon. The Lisbon Treaty was actually at that point dead, and the Interalpha banking crowd, the City of London and allied financiers, said, no, we're going to go for a second revote. The whole thing is completely illegal, and I think we've reached now a moment in Europe where we're on the verge of a real perfect storm. Ireland, the current government, is now going to go into a crisis because as of today, they've caved in to pressure from the European Central Bank, and they've said that they will not demand that the bondholders take a haircut. So Ireland is not going to be able to make those debt payments, and you've got a very vibrant reaction that was reflected in the high vote for Gerry Adams and Sinn Féin in the Irish parliamentary vote.
And then that leads to Portugal and then Spain, and Germany's already saying no in bankrolling this. We could see the breakup of the EU.
Yeah, exactly. It's coming. I think it may blow up before the June meeting of the European heads of state. And by the way, add to that list the unspoken other really big case of a bankrupt situation, which is Italy. Nobody talks about that. They're a little bit better at cooking the books. But after Spain, an even bigger blowout and bailout is Italy.
So Jeff, what's the order of this in Europe? When does it hit England and the U.S., as we know, that are in even greater debt?
Well, I think that the fact of the matter is that the core of the City of London centered financial oligarchy is a banking group called the Interalpha Group, set up by Lord Jacob Rothschild back in 1971, right at the point that the whole Bretton Woods system was being taken down. And many of the leading banks of the dozen banks in this Interalpha Group are already the recipients of many of these big bailouts from the various governments and taxpayers. So right now, the biggest bankruptcy is actually centered in the City of London and on Wall Street.
And that's why Bloomberg admits today that the biggest section, the largest amount of money, was not U.S. banks. That proves what you're saying. It was actually EU and British-based banks, and not just them. Libya was getting American taxpayer money.
Exactly right. Yeah, this was something that one of the rare moments where the Supreme Court, this Supreme Court, did something useful. They refused to give cert to a second court, appeals court ruling that ordered the Fed to disclose to Bloomberg and, ironically, Bloomberg and Fox the full list of loans that the Fed made during the 2007-2008 crisis. And you're right, an overwhelming percentage of that loan money from the Fed, from American taxpayers, watering down the value of the dollar through this printing operation, went to overseas banks. Gaddafi was a big beneficiary.
So everybody's blaming American lifestyles for this and unions as the scapegoat. Meanwhile, Europe for the last year, 2 years, has been grandstanding against the West. Turns out it's the U.S. that's been actually bleeding out for them.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And, you know, three cheers for Senator Saunders, who was the first person to get the one thing into the Dodd-Frank bill that meant a damn bit of good, namely forcing the Fed disclosures. And now we're just seeing the follow-on to that with this court ruling.
Well, this is too incredible with Jeff Steinberg. I'm so glad that Sean Stone made the suggestion to get you on with him. Let me just ask live on air, and if you can't do it or if one of you can't, just tell me now, you know, here on the air. Do you guys want to do 20 minutes into the next hour so we can continue to flesh this out and get some comments from Sean back?
I'd love to. Sean, yeah, you good?
Yeah, I'll stay on. I'll stay on with you.
Okay, great. Okay, we're going to break in 1 minute. When we come back, I want to get some comments from Sean. But breaking this down, because, folks, Jeff Steinberg's 100% on for my own research and has a higher level of understanding following this for decades. What are you going to cover? Give us a preview when we come back from break, Jeff.
Okay, well, look, I think that there's more to say about this whole confluence of the absolute bankruptcy breakdown of the financial system, the Libya business, and I think that there's something very relevant to President Obama, which is his willful takedown of some of the most critical science programs that right now are our first line of defense against some potentially very serious natural disaster catastrophes.
All right, that's right. You're looking at the Ring of Fire, too, and what's intensifying there. We're going to cover that all 20 minutes into the next hour. Then I'm going to continue with news and information into the fourth hour today with Sean Stone, a director, writer in his own right, actor, and also the son of Oliver Stone, and Jeff Steinberg, Executive Intelligence Review Senior Editor. I'm Alex Jones. All right, going into the fourth hour live today with Jeff Steinberg and Sean Stone. Comments on what Jeff Steinberg's been breaking down here. I mean, absolutely on target. The world is in such a key state of flux right now, and the banks that have engineered this system, they're in a lot of trouble. What's your view on what's happening, Sean?
Indeed. My view on what's happening? It's a very interesting thing, isn't it? I don't think there's any irony in the fact that it's coming around 2012. We approach this date. I think that there's Jeff will get into this a bit more, but there is this factor of what is happening to the planet on a physical, geophysical plane, right? In terms of its relationship to the sun, solar spot activity is really intensified, which means the electromagnetic rays from the sun are up embodying the planet, you know, contributing to this so-called Ring of Fire activity from the Haiti quake to Chile.
By the way, I had a top astrophysicist, Piers Corbin, on 3 weeks ago, and he concurred that, you know, on the day of the tsunami and the mega earthquake, there was a record solar flare that the magnetics hit the world. And then there was also the moon, the closest it had been to the Earth in 20 years, a giant moon. And he said 100% that's what did it.
Exactly, exactly. And so what you have is this whole issue of an end game and end times converging, which is what's most interesting to me. That, you know, it's not hidden, for example, that the Masons are particularly interested by the Book of Revelation. And there was a realization for a long time that we were going to hit this period of geological upheaval and overall bombardment with cosmic radiation, which we don't even understand all the implications of it. I think, frankly, the ancient Egyptians and various Mayan-related civilizations, maybe the Sumerians, would have understood it a bit better than us because of their orientations towards the stars. And so really the goal is now to advance ourselves scientifically in understanding what is this concept of radiation? Why don't we study nuclear power? We're so freaked out by nuclear power that we're not willing to really understand what it is that makes an atom. As we know, we don't quite know what gravity is to this day. There's four essential forces, right? The weak force, strong force, electromagnetic, and gravitational forces. They're all acting upon us as beings. So when I say I'm fascinated by the concept of energy and plasmas and how plasma is the fourth state of matter. And this is potentially where some of this paranormal activity is coming from. Then why don't we try to understand it scientifically? Because it's going to have impacts in our lifetime, I believe. And
well, we're
going to
cover this Ring of Fire report out of LaRouchePub.com more. And the few minutes we got left in this hour, Jeff, starting to get into what you were talking about, dealing with this financial collapse. How are the globalists going to try to manage this?
Well, you pointed out yourself just a few moments ago that one thing that they always resort to in these kinds of crisis points is to start up wars. But I think that it's important that on a deeper level, what you've got embedded within this international financial oligarchy is a faction that is really radical Malthusian in the sense that they believe that this combination of a financial meltdown with various potentials for permanent wars in major parts of the globe can bring about their long-term objective, which is the vast reduction of the population of this planet down from the current level of about 7 billion people to somewhere in the range of under 2 billion. You know, Prince Philip, who was the founder of the World Wildlife Fund back in the early 1960s, along with Prince Bernhard, openly said that it's his desire to be reincarnated as a deadly virus so that he can help participate in the reduction of the world population by 80%. So some of these guys are deluded into thinking that if you unleash this kind of cataclysm, that somehow or other there's a few high-minded people in the oligarchy that are going to survive it. And my message to them is read Boccaccio's Decameron and find out what a folly that was the last time we plunged into a dark age.
All right, world depopulation, that's their agenda. Back in 1 minute. For Jeff Steinberg, the senior editor of Executive Intelligence Review, a cornucopia of key information, is our guest. LaRouchePub.com is the website. We also have writer, director, actor Sean Stone joining us. Do another 20 minutes with these guys. Short segment now, 12-minute segment coming up, then they're going to leave us. I'm going to continue with some key economic news after that. Very excited to be having Lyndon LaRouche joining us sometime live next week, getting that lined out. Just an amazing overall discussion we've had. In this short segment, I want to finish up with the economic front and then your concern about the heat up of the Ring of Fire, Jeff, because to have that coming from you, that's really scary because I know how researched and scholarly you are. But continuing with what's happening to the economy, clearly we're in a depression, but they're telling us everything's wonderful, even though housing prices are plunging at record levels. Where do you see this going? What are some other key economic indices?
Well, you've got a lie coming out from the Bureau of Labor Statistics today. They're completely cooking the books on the actual employment situation in the United States. The real accurate figures are probably that we're facing an unemployment figure of over 20% and a combined unemployment and underemployment figure of over 30%. That's if you take the entire population from the age bracket from, say, 17 to 65 or 64, and look at the total size of that population, and then start looking at the official labor force statistics from that number, what they've simply done has been to write off millions of people out of the labor force in order to carry forward a lot.
Well, even 60 Minutes admits the real national unemployment is 22, California 33. Every other private group debates 22 to 24, but they're telling us that the recession ended in June of 2009.
Right. They're all lying, and the Obama White House is desperate over the fact that their view is that if they can't fake the unemployment numbers to 8% or less, then Obama's reelection is doomed, and so they're going to lie, cheat, and steal any way that they can to create a false illusion of a, quote, recovery, when in fact anybody who is out there living in this economy knows that there is no recovery. It's getting worse.
Jeff, half the restaurants or more that I've gone to for years are shut down.
That's right. And think about the fact that the states of the United States are collectively bankrupt.
43%, even the Wall Street Journal admits. How are they going to go into federal receivership to bail them out when the feds are even more bankrupt?
That's right. And if you start printing money to deal with this without writing off the trillions of dollars in complete phony gambling debt that's been assumed by taxpayers, then you're stuck with the worst hyperinflationary situation on a global scale, comparable to what happened in Weimar Germany in the fall of 23. But look, there's another aspect of this that gets us beginning to talk about this Ring of Fire issue. There are, as you identified in your interview with Piers Corbin, there are people who understand that while the science is not yet perfected, there are ways in which to establish an early warning system about the onset of these earthquakes and other seismic activities. And the Obama White House, and this is something that a group of scientists are screaming and yelling about, the Obama White House has shut down one of the most advanced of these programs called the Destiny 1 satellite, which was a combination of a radar satellite and a LIZAR satellite that would have detected and given us a better early warning indication through monitoring of both solar radiation and seismic activity when and where you might be facing.
Jeff, stay there. Stay there. Got a break. I want to get your take on this because I even saw ABC News 2 weeks before the earthquake predicting it, so they know what's going on. Let's get your take on that, and then we'll get Sean Stone's take as well. Infowars.com.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic. And as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable, patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver. That's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, utopiasilver.com, or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338. UtopiaSilver.com, taking back America's healthcare one American at a time.
Hundreds of nations have fallen to tyranny in the last century alone. This is our last chance to not relive history.
As we're finishing off this agenda, they'll be pulling the rug from underneath Americans at home.
They have tremendous influence on our president and Congress, and they really are calling the shots.
I think it's incumbent upon all of us as American citizens to pay attention.
Fall of the Republic identifies the enemies of our nation, the criminal offshore cartel, hell-bent on destroying sovereignty and on its ashes constructing world government.
Tim Geithner, Bernanke, they're arsonists. They're asking for more matches, and the Congress is saying, who do we make the check out to?
Today seems like nobody does care. And right now in Washington, D.C., we have seen a fall of the Republic.
Get your copy of Fall of the Republic on DVD at Infowars.com or watch it online right now in super high quality at PrisonPlanet.tv.
This message starts with a great offer from Big Berkey Water Filters, because we don't want you drinking dangerous water 1 minute longer. Right now, purchase any filter system from BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com to get your choice of two Berkey Sport Bottles, a KDF shower filter, a set of fluoride filters, or our new Sightglass spigot absolutely free. Why do this? Because over 60% of municipal water is fluoridated, and at less than 2 cents per gallon, Berkey Water Filters purify both treated and untreated water, removing dangerous chlorine, fluoride, and other contaminants. Big Berkey water filters are powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water, so they're perfect for rainwater collection systems and emergency preparedness. Remember, Big Berkey includes free shipping on every order over $50. And GCN listeners get 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit BIGBERKEY waterfilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's BigBerkeyWaterfilters.com or call today 1-877-99-BERKEY.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Going back to Sean Stone for this final segment, little 12-minute segment we've got, and Jeff Steinberg. Sean, hearing what he's breaking down, the fact that even ABC News 2 weeks before the earthquake and tsunami said, will the giant moon cause tectonic action in the Ring of Fire around the Pacific? I mean, they tell us, the UN said back at Copenhagen a year and a half ago, they said the sun has no effect on climate, which they know is ridiculous. Why don't they want us to know this? The moon, they say, has no effect, though it controls our tides. But I have astrophysicist after astrophysicist, prestigious ones on, and they say the moon doesn't just manipulate the tides and move the waves, it moves the magma. I want you to comment on that, then we're going to go back to Jeff Steinberg, because he was just breaking down the fact that they're cutting off the federal funding of the science divisions that actually monitor this.
Yeah, well, I think you have to look at, remember what environmentalism was, is that it was a movement that sort of coincided with the end of so-called colonialism, direct colonialism by the British and French and whatnot. And so if you now are giving these nations over to their self-rulership and the concept of a nation state, which is what America and the concept of republicanism was based upon, right, from the 18th century forward, a nation state. So if you're trying to avoid nation states, if you want international controls, which is really, at the end of the day, decided through these financial monetary consortiums called banks and whatnot, and their shadow banks. And then if you want to keep control, what do? Well, you promote something called environmentalism. And that basically asserts the idea that you don't have control of your country's destiny. You can't produce your own energy. You can't go to nuclear power. You can't mine coal, whatever you choose to do, because it will destroy our planet as a whole. Now the planet becomes common property, a commonwealth of all mankind. So you really have no sovereignty anymore. And that's what the environmental thing has always been about, to my mind. It's not about science. It's an ideology. And so, of course, they want to keep this environmental thing going, even though it's funny you don't really hear so much about global warming anymore, because what you're having are these drastic climactic shifts. And it's true, there are climactic shifts that are taking place, but it has to do, again, with these issues of, you know, solar radiation, cosmic radiation.
Yeah, the only constant is change. And so they tell us, give up your rights 10,000 years ago or the sun won't come back during an eclipse. It's the same priest class manipulating and lying to us. And if you look at the grassroots of environmentalism, sure, caring about the environment is important, but the very foundations of it are admittedly the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the Dutch royal family, the British royal family. It's all about modern neo-feudalism, an excuse to say that humans are a scourge, Malthusianism. I want you to continue along that line, Sean Stone, but you were starting to get into that, Jeff Steinberg. Break that down, the heart of the environmental movement. Aren't these just a bunch of green Nazis?
Well, you know, it's ironic. Back in the 1940s, when it was really a bunch of British and Swiss oligarchs who were launching what they called conservation, they were a lot more candid. They said that Hitler gave eugenics a bad name, so we can't revive the eugenics movement, which, of course, was one of the most popular movements sponsored by the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, from the beginning of the 20th century. So they chose conservation as the basis for an actual revival of the politics of eugenics. And these were explicit admissions by people like Sir Peter Scott and Julian Huxley back in the 1940s. And nothing has changed whatsoever since then. So, this is an assault against science. And the point I was starting to get at a moment ago was that the Obama administration has willfully shut down all of the crucial programs that would both give us the early warning detection potentials to avert massive human tragedy. And they've scaled back the budgets for all of the legitimate first responder programs. In fact, right now in California, if there was to be an earthquake above an either 5 or 6 level on the Richter scale, the catastrophic consequences would be enormous. There's no money left for evacuations. Mary Landrieu wrote a letter to Obama last week basically saying that the FEMA Earthquake Response Fund runs out of money as of June, and here you've got the most competent scientists saying that we are going to spend the next 2 years at least in a period of dense seismic activity, where the idea that Oregon and California and Washington State are going to escape some kind of a major seismic event is really a roll of the dice. It's a high risk, and you can't absolutely forecast long in advance, but the prospects are that you're going to get some kind of major earthquake or volcanic activity in the next few years.
And they know the sun and the moon are the big drivers. Why are they so obsessed with UN pronouncements that the sun has no effect on the climate? It controls the climate of the entire solar system. I mean, scientists decades ago with Shoemaker Levy hitting Jupiter had to come out and admit that, okay, we get hit by big asteroids and comets every 10 to 100,000 years on every 10 million. Why are they so obsessed with denying this? I know it was LaRouche who first developed the idea of a asteroid missile defense.
Well, you know, one thing that we found out just in the last few days, because we wanted to find out why it is that there's a section of the nominally scientific community, some of the seismologists and geologists who deny any relationship between solar flares and other radioactive events, electromagnetic events, and seismic. Turns out these are all people who have been the leading science advisors to Al Gore. And in fact, in 1990, Al Gore pushed through legislation that shut down all of the funding for any programs that involved attempts scientifically to figure out the causalities and develop early warning.
So, Sean, that goes back to what you said an hour and a half ago here when you were at Princeton. It's all about controlling the research so you can control the ideas and science of civilization. This is a war against civilization, a war against Renaissance, a war against Enlightenment, a war to basically try to preemptively put us back into Stone Age thinking.
The new Dark Ages, as LaRouche has put it, and which is potentially a coming. I mean, it's pretty scary, but if you look around, I think you feel it more and more. There's this real potential in America for a third world country. And I mean, having been to many third world countries in my life, you know, you get the sensation in New York City especially, you know, of a city where it's the rich are basically concentrated on the island. Prices are going up, inflation is crazy, and the poor being driven off the island step by step. But even, you know, there's like enclaves of wealth, and then for the most part, you know, it's the roads are falling apart. They're worse in some places than some roads I've been to in Africa, in New York City.
Yeah, well, no man is an island, and the globalists, the rich, are destroying their future.
Yeah, you know, I don't know where they plan to live. I don't know. Maybe in the Caymans or, you know, St. Barts, where they like to vacation.
They are certainly moving there quickly. We're almost out of time. This has been an intriguing interview. I look forward to having you both back up. I want to give Jeff Steinberg 2 minutes with closing comments on what he sees unfolding militarily in Libya and why they're doing that, and then a minute and a half or so closing comments from Sean Stone.
Well, look, Obama now has a military doctrine, which is based on a rejection of sovereignty, humanitarian interventionism, and on top of that, he's practically destroyed the legitimate functioning of sovereign nations in the UN Security Council because he extracted an abstention vote from Russia and China on the basis of a witting lie that was passed on to them by Susan Rice, but it came directly from Obama. The lie that this was not about regime change, but was really only about humanitarian assistance to the people of Benghazi. I think the bottom line here is that Obama has really reached the point where there are such a multiplicity of reasons why he has to be removed from office if this country is going to survive, that we're not even proposing impeachment. We're saying that this guy is out of his mind and that the vice president needs to invoke Section 4 of the 25th Amendment because Obama is mentally incapable of continuing as president.
All he does is NCAA picks and golf.
I know, exactly. Well, I'm perfectly happy to have him have a nice suite at St. Elizabeth's Hospital for the criminally insane and spend all his time, you know, being interviewed on ESPN. But he needs to be removed as president because there are concrete actions that can be taken, starting with Glass-Steagall. Write off this $17 trillion bailout.
Exactly. The bankers
bubble.
Have raped us seven ways to Sunday, and we can't even have Glass-Steagall back.
That's right. But I think you're going to see action in the Congress in the next 2 weeks on Glass-Steagall. There's some surprises coming that hopefully we'll be able to
Jeff,
talk
we're
about.
Out of time, but I look forward to having you up in the very near future. Amazing. Let me say bye to you during the break. In the minute we have left, Sean Stone, closing comments.
Well, I just want to say it's interesting how this, to tie it all together, this convergence. Now, in Libya, you have Gaddafi, who is back and forth, has a U.S. asset or British asset, Italian. We don't really know exactly what point, you know, who he played, whose side he played over the various years. But what's interesting is we find that he's a Satanist, right? Because they found this cache of books that he's practicing black magic and Satanism, right? When they stormed his palace recently. And now I know there are videos there are videos you get from the Middle East occasionally, but you're not allowed to have them in America because I know people have been they've been invaded by the FBI and these properties seized when these videos are found out. These videos show things like jinn, shadows attacking people who can levitate, various you know, so-called mystical phenomena which are actually caught in video, but you are really not allowed to have in America. And I know that the Arab world is very interesting. Why is this happening in Egypt and Libya at this moment, which is really the center of faith left in this world? Who actually believes in God is the strongest faith still in the Middle East. So as this region burns, I think you're going to have a real crisis in spirituality in this coming new age, as they call it.
Well, it's certainly bizarre. Sean Stone, thank you for joining us, talking about your upcoming movie, Greystone. Jeff Steinberg, thank you for joining us. I'm going to come back and cover some final news. But thank you both for coming on with us. Look forward to speaking to you again in the future. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Pretty interesting interview in the last 2 hours with Sean Stone and Jeff Steinberg. We'll be back live tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at least. Well, not tomorrow. Tomorrow's Saturday. It'll be retransmitted, but Sunday, 4 to 6 p.m., and then on Monday. The days all run together. I work like 7 days a week. I mentioned this earlier, but this is a big deal. Foreign banks tapped Fed's secret lifeline, most at crisis peak, and it turns out most of the money went to foreign banks. Gaddafi, the EU, you name it, Bloomberg reports. Walmart CEO Bill Simon expects inflation. He goes on to say, serious. It's going to be serious. Ladies and gentlemen, we're not rocket scientists. When you have global dollar devaluation, it's the world reserve currency, prices are going to go up even if they shrink the size of products and the quality. And all I ever do is support and promote what I believe in, and it's symbiotic. It then allows the broadcast to continue. But I promote whatever I believe in. It's that simple. And it's important to support local sponsors of our AM and FM affiliates because this information is so important, obviously. But I promoted silver when it was $5 an ounce. It's $37 an ounce right now. I promoted gold when it was $256 an ounce. It's $1,400 plus right now. I wanted to briefly bring Ted Anderson up for an offer that's only available to our radio listeners because the price has gone up since he bought it during that dip, and he is running out of the silver. Three silver dollars, three of my films. You get the silver dollars at spot or below, three free films and free shipping. He's got a bunch of other great silver and gold offers, but I believe in silver and gold. That's what I'm in. Look at the track record, and these are the best deals that I can find anywhere. Ted Anderson, break down what's currently happening and the special gold and silver deals you've got for folks. When they call, they got to say it's the Alex Jones special, or they'll pay a little more, which is still a great deal.
Yeah, well, let me just add in there real quick. I mean, three videos, Fall of the Republic, Endgame, and Obama Deception. If anybody out there wants to actually do something good in this world, watch those videos and pass them out to everyone you know. And here's just the greatest way to get them. Silver hit $38 an ounce this week, and you can buy this whole package for $110. If you want to add something into that, ask for the Creature from Jekyll Island book. It's $31 delivered with a silver dollar in it. People are buying silver from back when the prices were well below. I mean, for crying out loud, this goes back to about $26 silver, and here we are almost approaching 40. I mean, it's like, Alex, I don't think you can get better than this. But people want liberty. They want to have freedom. You're not going to have liberty. You're not going to have freedom unless if you understand the animal that's eating you alive here. And the way you do that is by doing a little study, a little work.
That's right. The banksters do not want you to be self-sufficient and ready. Look at Gaddafi. Look at the globalists. They're always hoarding silver and gold. Look at Mubarak. They know what to do.
They sure do. And you know what? Yeah, I mean, Gaddafi has gold. That's why the United States can't cut off his resources. You don't want the United States to cut off your resources either. You should have silver, and you should have gold, and you should have these videos, and you most certainly should read the Creature from Jekyll Island book. And all you have to do is call 1-800-686-2237, and you're going to be buying silver for $30 an ounce rather than $40.
Absolutely. I mean, you've got that deal with the three free videos and the free shipping, and you're getting the silver dollars at below spot from the last time I saw that deal. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Below spot. Alex, you can't even
below spot, three silver dollars below spot. That's an incredible deal. And then on top of it, three films and free shipping. No one can beat that. But you've got The Creature from Jekyll Island, a $20 value, and a silver dollar. Tell folks how much that is.
Well, that's the thing. It's $31 delivered, and The Creature from Jekyll Island itself, if you just buy the book, is $26.
Let's stop again. Silver is at how much right now?
Right now, silver hit a peak today of $37.75.
Okay, so you've got for $31 a silver dollar, that's a $6 discount, and the free shipping and the book. These are insane deals. I mean, folks, I cannot explain to you that Ted does this to be super competitive. That's why he's now the fifth biggest gold and silver broker in North America, because he's crazy competitive. 800-686-2237. No one can compare to that video deal with the three silver dollars or the one silver dollar and the Creature from Jekyll Island. You ought to buy at below spot 100 of those silver dollars, get 100 from Creature from Jekyll Island books, and give them to everybody you know. It's an info war. I can't say buy this deal and support us, because quite frankly, it doesn't support us. Ted is a wild man. 800-686-2237, 800-686-2237. Now, Ted, you did tell me you are going to have to go up soon because you are running out of this.
Yeah, well, I mean, come on. Silver is hitting $40 an ounce. When you can buy silver dollars right now, Alex, if you just go shopping around, they're $40 a piece.
$31 with a free $20 book. Do the math, folks. Doesn't take a rocket scientist. 2 plus 2 equals 4. I love it. I love it. I love it. 800-686-2237. And I'd say support us. It doesn't support us. I don't know why Ted even does these deals, but I love it. 800-686-2237. And ask about other radio specials to get the bigger discounts on other gold, silver coins. They got a whole list there. 800-686-2237. Thank you so much, Ted Anderson.